And coming up next on Free Radio, you've been listening, of course, to Louis LaFortune's Friday Night Show, which you can catch every Friday night, interestingly enough. And it it comes on at, Resistance and Renewal, it's called. It comes on at 6:30 and runs until 8 o'clock. You're tuned to Freak Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we are at 101.3 FM and other secret streams for all you folks who haven't yet picked up on our mystery stream. I think, you know, sometime during the show I'm actually going to broadcast the secret stream. So have your pencil and paper ready in case you haven't already got it. Yeah, we can't really do the freakradio.org thing anymore because it's... We've been attacked by commercial bandits and extortionists who are trying to squeeze the station to death for money for every song we play that has a copyright, even though we make nothing at all out of it. So, anyway, it's almost 9:30, in about 30 seconds or so it should be, maybe even less, maybe more, and I'll be with you for 3.5 hours. My name is Robert Norse, and I do a twice-weekly show called Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And we talk about local civil liberties issues and broader issues, particularly concerning the rights of folks outside, folks on the street who get hassled because they are in public places and not purchasing items of profitability for those who are selling them or otherwise fitting into the institutional war and profit system, which is making the nation destitute and creating whole new classes of not just of dead people, but of criminal people and miserable people. And when some of us are trying to change that. So maybe you're one of those folks. Maybe you're just listening in to kind of hear what the, what's happening. Maybe you're bored. In any case, please feel free to listen in and to call in. My number here is 427-3772. Also 469-3119. Again, area code 831 for those outside the area, 831-427-3772, 831-469-3119. And just to begin things on a musical note, let's hear a little something from Tether Horse. Darling,
action.
Tether Horse with the song called Further From Morning. Again, this is a group that I ran into on the streets down on Pacific Avenue. And now they are on the air. So if you are playing on Pacific Avenue and you see a chunky old guy with a beard and a tape recorder, well, say, hey, hey, my group wants to be on free radio. You know, slip me $50 and actually... That would not be appropriate for our station. But in fact, if you want to be on the air, particularly if your songs are politically relevant to Santa Cruz, which I got to say, Tether Horse's songs aren't particularly, but the fact that they're out there playing on the street means something to me. Hence, I put them on rather than something which you can find commercially over the other stations or buy in a store or download on the internet. I think you can actually download Tether Horse, too. They are at tetherhorse.com, T-E-T-H-E-R-horse.com. So, welcome again to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Good morning. And I'm kind of slowly getting it together. Checking out some of the stories about Wells Fargo Bank, one of the largest, well, the largest foreclosure bank in the country. There actually is I missed the teach-in up in San Francisco that they had on April 10th. I was trying to encourage people to go up there, and I couldn't really do it myself. I didn't think I had the time because I was in the middle of legal maneuvers myself. But I don't know if anybody made it up from Santa Cruz. There was a three-hour teach-in at the San Francisco State University on Monday. But and it's possible, actually, 2.5 hours. But it's possible somebody may have audio or video that. But in any case, all this apparently is preparatory to an upcoming protest and action at the Wells Fargo Annual Shareholders Meeting, which is coming up Monday, April 23rd. So that'll be, I guess, I got the wrong calendars on the wall. Somebody put up the March calendar. No, no, no. We've gone on. It's April showers bring May flowers, if you know what I mean. We are in April. And, yeah. April 23rd is, of course, boy, it's a week from tomorrow. And that's not too far away. Here's what is written about it on the Occupy San Francisco tweet. Occupy Wells Fargo, California, Montgomery Street, near the Montgomery BART station in San Francisco. Teach-ins, music, film screenings, food, and more. Please come join the occupation the day before the 99% takeover of the Wells Fargo shareholders meeting. This looks like a celebration that the day before the shareholders meeting. Sorry about that. Which I guess was Tuesday the 24th. So it's Monday the 23rd. There's a... Looks like a street party, even. Looks like it's... I don't think there's any building there. So It's going to be outdoors. Put a spotlight on issues that affect us all, foreclosure fighters, students, the LGBT community, feminists, anti-war activists, immigrants, prison abolitionists, environmental sustainability folks, workers, not to mention the older folks who see their money and their homes disappearing as the foreclosures hit. Come and share stories of how Wells Fargo Bank's Wall Street has affected you, your organization, and your community. This Occupy San Francisco organized occupation will not risk arrest or stay overnight. Uh-huh. So it's a mellow event. We aim to spread the word about why thousands of us will be taking nonviolent direct action, which sounds like they are going to risk arrest the next day, and protesting at Wells Fargo's shareholder meeting. Bring banners, food, and your friends. And then there's a Facebook page to go to. You can find this if you go to OccupySF.org, the tweet. Or if you search in a search engine for OccupySF, which is the Occupy San Francisco group, you can get some more information. You can get some printouts there. A schedule of activities. And the activities on the week from tomorrow up on near the Wells Fargo shareholders meeting the day before are apparently listed here, and we'll see what they are in a moment. Call-in number again, I want to remind you in case you have some thoughts. If you've had some experiences with Wells Fargo Bank, the number here is 427-3772 and 469-3119. That's the on-air number. And boy, it's taken forever to connect. So what I'm going to do is just try my a separate phenomenon over here. Here's an interesting what you should know about Wells Fargo Bank, which I haven't really discussed much on the air. I've talked a lot about the local stuff around the persecution and prosecution of people for the protests back in November at the bank. Here, I should say, at the vacant bank building across the street from Wells Fargo Bank. Ironically, people who've actually occupied banks have not been prosecuted. They have been arrested or they've been sat out and waited out and caused banks to close. They've been evicted. But I don't think there's been the kinds of sustained prosecutions. But here's some of the history of Wells Fargo Bank, according to what you should know about Wells Fargo Bank on the website thesuperrich.wordpress.com. It's by a guy called Kurish Benam. Bloody from the beginning. And again, I can't vouch for this stuff, so check it out yourself. But it's worth considering, certainly. Henry Wells and William Fargo founded Wells Fargo in 1852, when California's gold rush needed to move the money made from mining the Sierra Nevada and violently evicting its indigenous people. Wells Fargo Bank bought the subprime mortgage monster Wachovia in the 2008 financial panic for $15.1 billion. That's Wachovia Bank. Wells Fargo Bank is now America's biggest bank by market capitalization of $161 billion and the highest rate of profitability. Bloated banksters too big to jail. A federal taxpayer bailout received by Wells Fargo, $36.9 billion. It's really hard to understand these figures because I don't really have a sense of how many kids could be put through school, how much rent could be paid with this, how much food could be purchased for hungry people, all kinds of alternatives. I really should have those available as I talk to you instead of just saying $36.9 billion. It's certainly a lot of money, though. Effective tax rate in 2008 for Wells Fargo Bank, 18.5%, almost half of what the average person pays. Offshore subsidiaries in tax havens, 77. I don't know if that's large or small. Campaign contributions in 2008 federal elections, $4.7 million. And again, needs to be viewed comparatively against other contributors. And also, it would be interesting to know who they gave it to. As it would be interesting to know how our local political figures, where they're getting their money from, and I think that to some extent those are public records. So if you want to find out who current city council members, supervisors, or the sheriff, or the district attorney have gotten their money from. You can. I think it's public record, and I'm hoping that's going to be investigated and made public to the community in the weeks ahead, because it may give us some insight into their policies and actions. Foreclosed families, growth from homelessness and hopelessness. Wells Fargo Bank originated or co-issued $74.2 billion worth of subprime loans, making it one of the top subprime lenders in the country. And those, of course, are the loans that prompted the huge, devastating puncture of the real estate bubble. I guess they created the bubble and the puncture. Wells Fargo Bank was one of the five big banks who robo-signed, and they're still doing this, or foreclosed on houses with forged or unreviewed documentation on countless families. Wells Fargo Bank is the second largest mortgage servicer in the nation. They also use the robo-signer. Holding young people hostage, profits from indentured students, the story continues. These are actually bullet points. Wells Fargo Bank holds $10 billion in private student loans. The average American student graduates $25,000 in debt. Interest rates on Wells Fargo Bank student loans are near 18%. Unlike credit cards, these loans are impossible to discharge in bankruptcy, and Wells Fargo Bank is not offering to reduce the principal or interest rates. Outstanding student loans total more than $979 billion. Wells Fargo Bank finances today's education bubble. Though it sounds like it, that means that if Wells Fargo only holds $10 billion in private student loans, I'm not sure if they're making a distinction between some other kind of, I don't know, loans via some public entities or what. Perhaps they are. Wells Fargo Bank sponsored the global banking lobbyist group, the International Institute for Finance, 2011 annual meeting in Washington, where the world's most powerful banks tell government regulators what they want. And over here, I should say, continuing with the upcoming protests, I mean, it's all very well to catch information about Wells Fargo Bank, and certainly important to have a sense of what's really happening there. And that's the more I learn about it, the better it is, as far as I'm concerned. What I'd like to know, though, is... let's see. Regarding this takeover on April 24th, a week from Tuesday, at 10 a.m., 99% will take over the Wells Fargo shareholders meeting. At least that's the prediction or the urging of Occupy San Francisco Twitter. It's a mass nonviolent protest and direct action. They will meet at Justin Herman Bradley Manning Plaza in San Francisco and march to shareholders meeting at the Merchants Exchange building at 465 California Street. And Wells Fargo's profits at the expense of our communities, America's biggest tax dollar. They profits at the expense of our communities is the claim. And I think the truth, America's biggest tax dodger has its tentacles in many different areas of our lives. As mentioned earlier, it leads the country in foreclosures and evictions for profit. It's a predatory mortgage lender and student loan shark. It is a prison and immigrant detention center profiteer. And it wasn't mentioned in the previous article. And it's corrupting our democracy. The goals of the action on Tuesday after the party on Monday night, or the gathering with speeches and films and so forth, is to stop the shareholder meeting from occurring and convene a people's stakeholder meeting. Boy, this sounds like a conspiracy to me. Watch out. But, or you can consider it a First Amendment action, which... at least in some cities, people are not afraid to announce and go to. And I guess they haven't been charged with felony conspiracies up there. If they have, they understand that juries aren't going to convict them or that these are bogus charges. I haven't actually heard of anybody being charged with felony conspiracy for these direct actions, which in theory, you know, they're announced. They talk about nonviolent protests. They talk about the desire to stop the Wall Street activities, or in this case, the bank activities, the shareholders meeting. That's, I would imagine, criminal behavior in at least somebody's book. The book, of course, written by the banks and by those in power who are rich. But perhaps we can say that it's a situation where people are stopping an evil that is greater than the supposed evil that they are doing by stopping the machine from moving. If the machine is a killing machine and you stop the machine from moving, you're preventing a greater evil. I think to me it's pretty clear that this is a way of saying, Wells Fargo, it's time to change the policies and stop ruining the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. And it's time for the government and the relevant government agencies to act on it. And since they won't, the people have to act on it. And the people are doing what they need to do. And it's a way also of empowering people. The April 24th coalition the April 24th mobilization is organized by a coalition of homeowners, clergy, immigrant rights advocates, unions, occupy groups, tenant rights groups, and residents from some of the hardest hit communities in the Bay Area and across the country. Get your friends, coworkers, occupiers, classmates, neighbors, or folks from your group. Take the day off and let's make history together. And there's flyers to download. There's a Twitter. It's WF24, standing for Wells Fargo, on the 24th, which is when the action is, Tuesday the 24th, 10 a.m. in San Francisco. And there's also nonviolent direct action information on this site. This is intended to be a nonviolent action. And there's more specifics about the Wells Fargo meeting. It's a general shareholders meeting. It takes place at 1 p.m. on the 15th floor of the Merchants Exchange building at 465 California. And they're planning to have people inside, the protesters, with proxies who are connected to our coalition to attend on behalf. All you have to do, I think, is purchase a share of Wells Fargo stock, and you have the right to be there. They're asking all participants to agree to remain nonviolent and to refrain from damaging property. They're encouraging people planning to engage in nonviolent direct action to attend these trainings, which will cover risking arrest, role-playing actions, as, say, you know, hey, you're under arrest, get moving, you know, and you have to respond in a way that is appropriate to the situation, so that if you are provoked, you're not going to be as intimidated as you might be, and you'll find a cool way to handle the situation in a way that will further the message, which has to do with showing, actually, I guess what it will probably show is the power of Wells Fargo to mobilize state power on its behalf. Or maybe it'll show the power of the people to persuade Wells Fargo to change its wanton ways. Less likely. And there's some trainings up in San Francisco on Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday. The 21st, the 23rd, and the 24th of April. There are many ways to participate. You can join the march and rally if you do not intend to risk arrest. You can support folks. If you want to picket, you can picket entrances as nonviolent direct action, sitting in and blockading to shut down Wells Fargo meeting and risking arrest, and their support actions, affinity groups, legal support, and there's an incoming phone call. Let's hear what's happening out there. Hello, you are on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. DG Matter Embryo in Fresno. Just wanted to say that it would actually be more justified if there was an occupation of the residences, the homes of the folks who run Wells Fargo.
Well, you know, you're always a little more radical than the folks up in that are doing their actions, but...
Well, no, I'm not trying to criticize, yeah, or maybe, but I'm not trying to criticize what they did, just more in response to the fact that there's even any legal matters going on with the occupation of that bank. What would be justified is to take away the homes and take to jail the leaders of Wells Fargo, and that's not, I mean, by definition, that's not radical. That's completely establishment and just going by the basic laws of the country that we already have as it runs now.
Yeah, and of course, you know, you'd want to give them a fair trial.
That's what I mean. It's like George Zimmerman. I mean, they get arrested, and then they're held in lieu of the trial. Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
no,
if we had any legal system, just the fact that the local people don't see that and understand that legally, it's dumb. It's not only something I disagree with, it's stupid. That's one reason why I think it's wrong what they're doing, because it's intellectually infantile. That's one reason we should all oppose it.
Well, it's certainly selective in the sense that if you're talking about arresting protesters and arresting bystanders versus and reporters and not arresting the people who are engaging in the major ripoffs, sure. I mean, these are people who've been shown to really to be guilty of both criminal mismanagement, profiteering, and at the very least negligence and slippery operations, and they don't get hauled into court. They don't get arrested. In fact, what they do is they settle because they have the legal power. And I would imagine, although I haven't examined the specifics of this California settlement that recently happened with the five major banks, including Wells Fargo,
Yeah. They
probably have. The laws themselves are written by people influenced by the lobbyists that they hire to talk to the legislatures. So.
I know, and in a lot of ways, and I'm going to let you go because we totally agree on this, and there's not a whole lot more to say. But that is the thing that's radical: the illegal and strangely stilted status quo that is ongoing. It's easy to see that those are the radical actions, just like the fossil fuel companies who are utterly destroying the environment that we have left. That one that was left to us after all the destruction that the ancient peoples did. They tried to destroy it so we wouldn't have anything. We have something left. Modern industry is continuing to kind of end that. That is the radicalness. You helping, the civil rights of the poor, or me thinking that these guys kind of should be arrested, maybe kind of, that's not radical at all, dude. That is not, that's just some basic common sense.
At some point,
we will graduate into being radical, maybe.
Well, who knows? Maybe an affinity group up at the Wells Fargo Action on the 24th will make a citizen's arrest of some of the major criminals at the shareholders' meeting.
Okay, I'm sure they would like to, and maybe there will be an attempt for that. Maybe at some point when the security forces start to side with the people, there just won't be protection for old guys like that, really.
Hey, what do you call old man?
Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying, there's nothing wrong with being old, but there's a problem with being old and running Wells Fargo, I suppose.
I think so.
And there is that, and I mentioned it because there is that ageism involved. Just the fact that you have to be 35 to be president, it's more logical to make it that somebody 35 and older cannot be president. Why? They've had so many times to fuck it up. They fucked it up every single time. If there's any cause for us to be ageist, it would be toward, let's give someone 18 to 35 a chance for about 40 times in a row, then we can balance it out.
Hmm. If the president could do something, I guess in theory he can, or she can. Thanks for calling in.
Cheers. Have a good show.
Hey, thanks, Matthew. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Fresno. I didn't ask him what was going on in Fresno, but I'm actually expecting a call shortly from Al Williams in Fresno, who's runs an organization called FOOCH, which is kind of... it's fuck with an H instead of a C. It's a Federation of United... Coalition of the Homeless, I think it is. Federation of United Coalition of the Homeless, something to that effect. I have one of their T-shirts. It's kind of cute. People see the word, what they think is fuck, and it's actually fooch. And it's my T-shirt says Fooch Santa Cruz, which is really about the homeless folks in Santa Cruz. But it also sort of addresses Santa Cruz authorities' attitude toward homeless people and the laws and practices they follow. Yeah, so this stuff is happening. I'm going to be mentioning more and perhaps interviewing folks in more detail about specifics about Wells Fargo. Though what I'm really hoping to do, as I've said in previous shows, and hopefully we'll get to and maybe get some research and information going, is the actual practices of our local Wells Fargo and how they have impacted homeowners, students, ordinary customers here, as well as the city in terms of the whatever particular privileges the city gives them, if they get tax benefits and so forth. I'm necessarily focusing on them to some extent because I think they are behind the prosecution of a lot of people and the scaring of a lot more, and I'm one of them in the 75 River Street actions, and that's true. That's one of the motivations. It's also true, however, that they're the biggest bank in the country, and they have a lot of impact on all kinds of policies and all kinds of people's lives, and that I would say it's almost certainly the case locally as well as nationally, but we need the figures and the facts to really bring this home to folks, and hopefully we're going to get them. If you're interested in being a part of a Wells Fargo research group locally, I'd love to have you get in touch with me. I can hook you up with other people. My number and the number of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, is 423-HUFF, 423-HUF, 423-4833. And do call in if you'd like. I'm going to kind of turn now to the situation in Fresno, where we should be hearing shortly from Al Williams, assuming he remembers to call in. Al is a successful litigant who in 2006-2007 won the Kincaid lawsuit, named after a woman named Kincaid, who subsequently died, but who before she died was one of the plaintiffs who sued the city of Fresno and got $2.3 million from Fresno and from Caltran in order to respond to the damages that they created by stealing and destroying homeless property, homeless survival gear, homeless medication, homeless identification, which is a practice that is used in many cities and actually is still used in Santa Cruz. The police department does it, but more notoriously, the Parks and Rec department does it. Police department is supposed to, and may well indeed, store the property. The Parks and Rec department, unless it's changed its policies under its new manager, and it does have a new manager, I've been told, and haven't been researching that and need to. The policy under the old Parks and Rec manager is not the head of the department. The head of the department is Danette Shoemaker, and a highly paid, several hundred thousand dollar public bureaucrat, public official, pleasant woman, but responsible for destroying a homeless campground with her false legal representations last fall. Responsible for shutting off public areas in order to shut down the First Amendment near Santa Cruz City Hall in 2010 in response to the Peace Camp 2010 protests. She's sort of part of a cabal, dare I say a conspiracy, because it is done behind closed doors, of public officials who, instead of bringing issues to the community to discuss or bringing issues to the talking with the protesters about their concerns in terms of the mistreatment of homeless people in Santa Cruz, prefer instead to crush protests through unconstitutional means, such as sentencing one of the protesters to 2.5 years in jail for sleeping on a bench with a sign, "Sleep is not a crime," which happened recently in the case of Gary Johnson, who is now... he's now at large pending appeal and pending the next time he falls asleep outside when the police decide to arrest him. And that would be, he would be doing what 15 other homeless people do in Santa Cruz every night. 1,000 to 2,000 people. It's hard to say how many there are out there, but there's huge numbers. And that's a real problem. In Fresno, it is the result of this lawsuit was a series of encampments that developed under the freeways. And because of the success of lawyers both with ACLU and other groups that sued the city and got this amount of money, most of which went back to the homeless people themselves and set some homeless people up in housing, but not enough. And more, perhaps more important than that, as well as kicking the city in the ass, making it nervous about future criminalizations, not that nervous, unfortunately, it also persuaded them to at least declare they were changing the policy of how they treat homeless property, which is now following state law, keeping it either 60 or 90 days, and then discarding it if it's not claimed. Of course, what they do is they keep it in areas where it would be destroyed by the weather, or and it's... they've recently declined to do that, and they've been stealing and destroying homeless property again, and that has resulted in a new lawsuit being filed by the ACLU. I would think they just want to go back to the judge and say, "Hey, they're violating your order. Jail these clowns," as The last caller suggested be done with the Wells Fargo executives. Jail the mayor. Jail the police chief. Jail the head of Caltrans. Jail whoever is issuing the orders or allowing his men to proceed, his women and men to proceed to destroy homeless property and sweep it away. But I think that's our caller. Let's see. Hello, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, this is Al Frisno.
The infamous Al Williams of Fooch. Can you hear me, Al?
Yes, I can.
Okay, if you're listening on the radio, turn down the stream because it'll be a delay. Just listen to me directly on the phone.
Okay.
And that way we will not have to wait a long time and talk. Are you there?
I'm still here.
All right, man. So you've been homeless now outside for how long?
Well, actually, first became homeless in 1991, and at the present time, I'm not homeless. So.
That's right. Actually, I was saying before that you benefited from the settlement, the Kincaid settlement, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I did okay on that, and the apartment I had at the time caught on fire and everything, so I ended up homeless again, but I'm back inside once again.
Is that because of the wonderful activity of Greg, what's his name, the homeless czar of Fresno?
Barfield?
Yeah.
Well, he helped a little bit this time.
Really?
Mainly because he owed me a few favors, and so he kind of had to do the right thing this time.
Really, because I've heard nothing but criticism of him from people like Mike Rhodes and others on the Fresno Homeless Alliance, that he's a highly paid, do-nothing bureaucrat who likes to chitter-chatter a lot about helping homeless people and ending homelessness in 10 years and so forth, but doing very little. But you say he's helped you.
Me, personally. I'm only one person out of, 20,000 homeless people here, but that's because of he owes me a little bit. And that was a favor that he kind of owed me. But as far as helping homeless in Fresno, no, he's, like Mike Rhodes say, he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing. He's more of a voice than anything else, the fall guy for the city. And he gets paid well for doing it.
So in other words, you have some sort of a private deal with this guy. You and he, they're buddies, that sort of thing, you know?
Well, kind of, sort of, not so much buddy-buddy, but we've known each other a while. And
I'm making a joke here, but...
Off the clock, when he's not on the clock working for City Hall, he's a normal person. But when he's on the clock, he's the fall guy, you know, and the man that they put out there, and they pay him $100,000 plus a year to do that. And he does well on it. But when he's off the clock, he becomes a normal person again.
Well, I've talked with Mike Rhodes a lot on the air in the past, and he for those who don't know, is a Community Homeless Alliance writer and activist and blogger who also goes down and helps with organizing protests to publicize in Fresno the destructive activities of the police and other authorities that are, again, moving on the homes, such as they are, with the tents or the sleeping bags or the sleeping bodies of homeless people. What's the latest attack or on encampments, or I should say the latest resistance to attacks, if that's happening?
Well, the latest incident occurred like a week ago, maybe a week and a half ago, at in the canal bank. And actually, the people just moved across the canal to the other side, so... For the moment, they are still safe, but the police and the city, under the direction of the city, I am sure, the mayor, you know, she runs the police department, so basically the mayor is the one that's ordering these people to go out and destroy homeless people's homes. You know, the police department does work for the mayor, you know.
So
therefore, I would put the blame more so on her and the city council more so than anyone else. Along with the police department.
So, but there was, I know there was, you had a number of encampments, Mike Rhodes was saying, that were then destroyed last fall in a sort of a series of moves, right, kind of nasty moves right before the winter set in.
Here in Fresno, they do that in the wintertime each year. They'll wait to the coldest part of the year, and then they'll do the attacks on the homeless people in the homeless encampments.
And these aren't encampments like down on Wall Street blocking businesses, or they aren't in the frilly and upscale residential areas. These are, you know, under freeways, kind of far away from hell and gone, right?
Right. Actually, the ones downtown are near the Pavarella House and the Rescue Mission, where the police direct homeless people to go to. Then they, once they go there, the police will come in and destroy their property and everything else.
So it's kind of a convenient way to round them up and then strip them down.
Exactly.
And are homeless people accepting this sort of supinely, quietly, we can't do much else, you know, or are they? Is there resistance developing? I know you've established this union. What do we call FUCH?
Free United Homeless Coalition.
Free United Homeless Coalition. I had it wrong, but has anybody actually joined this, or is it more of a jokey T-shirt deal?
No, it's actually some of us are actively involved within it, not nearly enough. Like I said, we got like 20,000 homeless people in Fresno, if not more. And I'm very disappointed with some of the homeless people not standing up for their rights. You know, they get bounced around and bounced around and bounced around, but yet still, you know, if 20,000 homeless people got up and went to City Hall and demanded, you know, housing and stuff, I'm pretty sure they will get it, but instead they kind of fall and they kind of weak when they come to stand up, you know, in front of a force like the police department or City Hall or entities like that.
Well, one of the ways they have of dividing homeless people is giving some of them housing, hint, hint, like they gave you, and then, you know, giving them favors like they give you, and then, you know, the rest of the people get their asses kicked. Has that divided you from homeless people?
Not really, because they didn't actually give me a house. They pointed me in the right direction to the housing authority with somebody that works there. She found a place for me that was affordable within means of my income. So I'm actually paying for my house. It's not a gift.
Right, but the fact is, if you are housed and you're not living with the people on the streets that are getting hassled, it may be, well, it could be you got more time and energy to put into helping them, or it could be that you have more to lose if you do help them, right?
Well, they're kind of both. Time-consuming. When you have a house, you have a lot of responsibilities, and I have a fiance also that I have to kind of take care of. Well, we take care of each other, let me put it that way. But it's still a responsibility, and it does take time from being out there on the ground, you know, fighting for the rights of homeless people. But on the other hand, you know, the people that know me in a particular part of town that I live in, they know that I'm always there, and I'm can be counted on, you know, when it's time to stand up, you know, to the plate.
Well, I know. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Please continue.
They cannot take that from me, you know, with the people who actually know me.
You know, in Santa Cruz, there was, of course, a large homeless encampment that developed next to the Occupy Santa Cruz area in our local San Lorenzo Park until it was destroyed by police on December 8th, and homeless possessions were compacted and thrown away, many of them, by the police department. But some homeless people were then invited to come to the foreclosed home of an individual who is working with the local Occupy Santa Cruz foreclosure working group. And I'm wondering, is there much, there seems to be some coordination in Fresno between religious groups, maybe unions even, progressive groups, civil rights groups, I don't know what you call them, housing groups, and homeless folks in resisting at least one of these attempted demolitions. I mean, I think Mike Rhodes and even you, I think you were talking about this at some point. You've been on the air here before, Al. We're talking with Al Williams of Fresno, how, you know, you and 100 other people were trying to stand off police, trying to destroy police and other authorities trying to move in on an encampment under one of the freeways or near one of the freeways, and they did this joint attack from two sides, and they were able to split the group. But for quite a time, you held them off, and there's a story about that on Central Valley Indie Media, indiebay.org/Central Valley. So there is some coordination. Is there much is much of that happening in terms of shelter coordination? I know Mike Rhodes was, and others were bringing down firewood, and they were a couple years ago setting up porta potties where the city was not really helping it, and garbage pickups. I guess the city helped on one occasion. They had a security guard guarding a porta potty, right? So in other words, is there much? What's happening now around that? Is there closer coordination? Are people turning their more interest to reelecting the bomber Obama, or are they? I mean, what's going on?
Well, actually, as far as housing and stuff go, first, I'll be meeting with Art Dyson. You're probably familiar with him. He's a local architect, very well known all over the world. And we finally got some land where we're going to set up an eco village or something similar to it. And I'll be meeting with him at 5 o'clock this evening to set, you know, get the planning started on it. And that's a big step. And we had a individual from the private sector who donated money for the down payment and everything for this. The city absolutely refuses to help us with a safe ground for homeless people. They come up with every, you know, for years they've come up with every excuse why they can't, but yet still they got homeless people all over the place, and it would be more feasible if they put the homeless people in a safe ground encampment, you know, with where they can actually live peacefully until they can get on their feet economically or find affordable housing. There are so many people here that do get income, like veterans. You know, that we have so many veterans here, and that's a big point of mine is the veterans that are homeless. You know, they've been to Vietnam. Like, I went to Vietnam and ended up homeless. And you go fight for this country so the wealthy can get richer, and yet still they won't give a veteran a house to live in after he gets back home and fall on hard times. And that's straight up disgrace, you know, to the country itself to allow that to happen, you know, in this day and time.
You know, yeah, I mean, I hear you. I mean, that's the situation in Santa Cruz, too, in terms of, you know, there's a significant, well, nationally, of course, figures have it that there's a, you know, a significant, what, maybe even a quarter or a third of the homeless are veterans. I don't know, a large number. Of,
right.
Or maybe,
that's, you know, totally unacceptable to me, you know.
But, I mean,
and I don't see how the city officials and our local, state, or national government should allow that to happen.
But they do, you know, and this crap about eco-villages, we tried it here, too. We, you know, we had a local philanthropist, Paul Lee, try to organize an eco-village here a decade and a half ago. And, you know, the same thing. You have authorities who say, oh, no, no, we have 63 reasons why you can't do that. And unless
right.
you have the power, unless you can mobilize the people to march on City Hall or to actually sit down and create the eco-village as people created Occupies throughout the fall, I think you find, although there may be some exceptions, I know in Ocala, Florida, I probably have that name wrong, there's been a tent city there supported by the city authorities for 5 years, and Ontario, California, maybe no longer, but for a number of years there was a tent city in Portland,
right.
Oregon. You know, there's Dignity Village. In Seattle, there's Tent City 4. So there are places where these things have happened. But and generally speaking, they are created, and I can't speak for the Ocala, Florida thing, or even the Ontario thing. I think they were created originally by people who just started like an Obamaville, if you will. We used to call them Hoovervilles in the 30s, you know. Looks like we have an incoming phone call. Do you want to hang loose? Maybe we got a question
okay.
or two for you, Al. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Al and Robert.
Hi, Robert. It's Danica. How are you guys doing?
Who is this?
This is Danica DeFoy, Robert.
Hey, Danica. Say hello to Al.
Hi, Al. How are you doing?
Fine, and yourself?
I just wanted to say thank you for coming yesterday, Robert, to the DA. And I know you called me about Rocky Anderson, but I did not get in contact with them in time yesterday. So I hope you guys got together at some point.
Yeah, of course, Danica and Al, and for our listeners, Rocky Anderson is running for president, and he came to Santa Cruz yesterday and attended the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly in front of the post office, where he and the whole General Assembly held off a police officer acting like a thug, frankly, who demanded people leave because he claimed they were on private property, the post office steps, which is a whole new definition of the post office. So I think it's, you know, it is a nonprofit corporation, you know, hired by the government, but it's still generally regarded as a public space, and it's you guys and gals held him off and you know, and backed them down by essentially continuing with your General Assembly and saying, you know, do what you got to do. And the police, the two police officers ultimately apologized, right?
Well, there was one police officer that was very rude, and I didn't catch his name, but the second police officer was, I guess, Officer Jones, was less rude and actually identified as part of the 99%. But I told them that we had consent not to have officers in uniform at our General Assembly, so I did ask them to leave and come back if they wanted to in proper attire.
Without guns, badges, and fancy uniforms, huh?
Yeah, uniforms of brutality not needed.
So how long did this whole incident take? Forgive me, Al, for interrupting you briefly. I just wanted to quickly do this, if it's okay with you.
Sure.
How long did this interruption of the General Assembly with the threat to people of arrest, if they didn't leave? Did he threaten to arrest you, by the way, the first officer?
No, yeah, I wasn't threatened with arrest this time, and no one else was, as far as I know. But they did kind of imply that if we did not move, that we would be arrested.
So
even though it was determined later, I guess, that we were allowed to be there legally.
So maybe it would have been cool if everybody had said, no, arrest us now, we're not going anywhere. This guy had you all arrested. You would have been released, and he would have had a nice, thick, fat lawsuit that finally some attorneys would be interested in because it's so blatant. You know, that happened to me back in 2002 when I was petitioning on the street, and Sergeant Lauren Butchie Baker came along and demanded I move, and I said, no, you know, forget it. He had me arrested, and then we sued him and ultimately got, I think it was $5,000.
Oh, wow, that's great.
It took 3 years, and it took, you know, a lot of rooting around, and but I think it helped to some extent to deter those actions. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't, hard to tell. But anyway, I just want to commend you for standing up to the police. And, you know, it's if people want to see it, they can actually see a stream of that whole action on Occupy Santa Cruz Facebook, the groups section. There's a couple of Occupy Santa Cruz Facebook pages. And there's a Abby did some great streaming and caught some of that. I think she caught you somewhat, too, Danique, on there. You're there on the stream, and it's been archived there for those who are interested.
All right. Well, I will let you guys get back to it, and thank you for your show, Robert.
Thank you. And Al, what number did you call in on? It was the 469 number, right?
Right, right.
Okay, I want to make sure.
119.
Yeah, I want to make sure I don't cut you off. So we're talking with Al Williams, who is with the Fresno United Free United Coalition of the Homeless in Fresno. How many people are a part of that coalition, Al?
Probably about 75 now.
And do they actually get together as a group and come to protests, or are they mostly sort of, you know, paper members?
Well, all of them paper members, and it depends on what's up front at the particular time in the area of the city. This Fresno is so divided with homeless people because they spread out throughout the city in so many different groups, and what affects them primarily, then they show up and they're ready to stand up and fight, but otherwise they kind of nonchalantly hang back and wait for everybody else to do it, and that's a big problem we have here, trying to organize everybody to get...
When's the last time the Free United Homeless Coalition folks got together for an action?
The 1st of April on the National Day of Action.
That was the No Fooling or We Ain't Fooling Day.
Right, we won't get fooled again.
There you go. I know that was something I talked about. It was organized by RAP, Western Regional Alliance Project.
Paul Bowden.
Yeah, and other groups. I mean, we got kind of sidetracked with other issues that came up here, although I think there was a little bit of that. We also did there was also a simultaneous day for the Food is a Right, Not a Privilege that Food Not Bombs was doing nationally also on April 1st, you know, to support the people that are being criminalized in different cities for serving free food to homeless people in the community under a Food Not Bombs banner. So what happened in Fresno around that? And how many of your coalition came out? And I'm thinking of how many members of your coalition came out.
Probably about 20 members, actually, of them. But there was a number of groups that appeared, like the Brown Beret was there. We took over, what we did, we went to Granite Park, a big, you probably heard of it. It was a big investment there that the city has spent like,
What's the name of the park? I'm sorry.
Granite Park.
Granite, go ahead.
And then they have the Met Museum. Then we assembled at a Chuck Clancy ballpark to start it off with. And that's another big waste of money that the city has, you know, spent millions of dollars on to no advantage or to anyone. So we was trying to target places like that in the $100 million losses that the city has, you know, put money up to benefit developers and.
Well, we should get you to come to Santa Cruz because they're planning to build, I don't know, is it they're going to buy a basketball team or a soccer team or an underwater scuba team. I don't know what the hell it is, but some huge boondoggle is coming up here in Santa Cruz, too. It's similar to what they've done in San Diego, San Jose. They have these great fantasies of a big sports arena is going to bring all these people to town. They'll all spend money on tickets. There'll be tax benefits. And they'll say, see, it'll help the homeless because they'll get 0.01%, in the, you know, of all this as a social service, which will be paid to people at the Poverello House type places who will get, you know, to tell people to, you know, join, go back to the woodshed and live there or else get out of town sort of thing. So you went to the Granite Park and you went to the ballpark. I think actually Mike talked about that on April 1st. I think we called in
right. And
discussed it. How many people showed up for those protests?
Altogether, I'm not sure because we had like three different places we was at, so I still haven't got an accurate figure on that yet.
Mm-hmm. And what about Occupy Fresno? Are they involved in this stuff? Are you involved with them? How close are they
somewhat,
to the home?
It's only a small group down at the courthouse part now. It's not very many. Pat, she's kind of running that. So
who's running it?
Yeah, Pat.
Uh-huh.
The homeless gentleman that... you know, he's a stand-up-to-the-play kind of person, and he's running that at the moment. But there's not too many people there now. It's kind of, you know, the excitement, I guess, has died off, and there's only a handful that stand down there now.
Now, do they stay overnight? Are they camping down there?
They at night, they move to the sidewalk, and they move off the courthouse part line onto the sidewalk, which is public property. The police really can't run you off the sidewalk.
Well, you have more civil rights in Fresno than we do in Santa Cruz. You're not allowed to sleep on the sidewalk in Santa Cruz or to camp there, even for political purposes. You'll get arrested or ticketed, or at least you'll face the threat of that. But in Fresno, apparently, liberal Fresno, I always thought Fresno was the opposite of liberal. You apparently, and the same is true actually, San Diego and Los Angeles. Those areas too, if you sleep on the street in those areas because of court settlements, the Jones settlement and the Spencer settlements, you'll be able to do that at night anyway. So,
right. Yeah, I remember when we was in Santa Cruz with you. You took us down what you call it, the Street of Shame.
We took you around on the Tour of Shame, I think it was.
Yeah, that was very interesting.
Yeah, that was back in 2008 or 2009 when you came to town. Yeah, with
two people came.
Pamela Kincaid and Mike Rhodes and a couple other folks.
We need to tour that again, see how much progress we made.
Please, so you can see how far back we've fallen, actually. Although that's something I wanted to ask you. I know, in spite of, you know, the crackdown that we see happening, we have a bunch of us now, there are 11 of us, who are being indicted for reporting on or being in a vacant building that was a part of an occupation protest last November. You can read about it online at the Santa Cruz Indy Media website. We're called the Santa Cruz 11. We face up to 7 years in jail for these so-called, actually it was, you know, a free assembly activity. The typical kind of occupation that happens in cities to dramatize abuses. So the repression has deepened, at least for some of us. But I'm wondering, in Fresno, if you compared activity, political activity for homeless people today or in the last month and, say, a year ago, how would you say? Would you say that it's intensified, perhaps as a consequence of Occupy Fresno and the Occupy movement across the country? Has it decreased? What would you say?
Well, it varies that... Anytime we do a certain action or something, the city comes out in force and tries to deter us from doing whatever we're doing. And then they kind of back off and fall back and let us progress on once they eliminate as many people as they possibly can. You know, so many people are afraid of being arrested. You know, police come up and say, you're going to jail. You know, a lot of people back off, especially the religious groups who aren't supposed to break the laws, but... Give me 100 strong soldiers and we'll take every city in California, you know, starting with Fresno. If I had 100 people who didn't give a damn about going to jail and were sent up to the plate like real troopers, and we can get things done. But there's so many people who care, but they when.
Now, are you talking about armed insurrection or nonviolent protest or something in the middle?
I don't think we could win with guns. You know, they are powerless with guns. Obviously, you know, they got the National Guard, and if need be, they'll call the army and blow us up. But you know, the, politically, if we had 100 strong protesters, we could do a lot of damage. You know, well, actually, a lot of not damage, but we could fix a lot of damage parts of the system that it's already damaged and need to be fixed.
What's coming up in Fresno that we should hear about? What's on the horizon for the next few months? I know you're mentioning these meetings, which I'm very cynical about, with city officials about eco-villages and, you know, pie in the sky and that sort of thing.
The city don't like R. Dyson because he's pushing this program. And like I said, we finally got a piece of land, and we're going ahead with the project now. And so I know we're going to get shot down. You know, they're going to come up with the codes that we're breaking on this. And R. Dyson is an architect, and so therefore he knows all the codes, and we're building everything to meet the code. But I'm sure they'll come up with some kind of way to try to stop us, because we've been trying to get the city to do this for so long, and they denied us. And now that we got private people putting in money to get the land, in which we have already got, we can go ahead with the project. And so we'll see what's going to happen. And matter of fact, I'll be meeting with Art Dyson today at 5 o'clock. And so we'll see exactly how soon we'll get it off the ground. You know, we got the place now. We got the space, property to do it. I'm sure we're going to run into some resistance with the city eventually. They said, go ahead if you can get the land. So we got the land, but I'm sure we're going to run into some resistance. Sooner or later.
How are the encampments doing? Are they still functioning? Are they still growing? Are they still being supported by private folks?
Well, they got the firewood brigade, which is taking food and firewood and everything out to them during the cold times of the season, the winter months. Like I was telling you a couple of days ago, it's raining. It's not raining today, but it's still gloomy and a little chilly outside. But we are. They're being supported by private people mostly.
And, I mean, comparing encampments today with encampments a year ago, are there as many? Are they as big? Are they as well organized? Are they different? What's happening compared with, let's say, 2011 in April?
Well, downtown around the Pablo House and Rescue Mission is basically the same. You know, them people in that particular area have totally given up on life because the city gives them enough to survive, like three meals a day, and but they still got the same stuff that goes on down there, like the drug dealers. You know, you can find more drugs there than you can any place in Fresno, and that's right there at the Pavarella House and the Rescue Mission. You know, you drive up there, the drug dealers run up to your car, want to know what you want. You know. Selling crack cocaine, crystal meth.
The Pavarella House is a social service agency that provides, we talked about this 3 or 4 years ago, these kind of little doghouse woodsheds that they have set up for homeless people that are they're very closely regulated for about, 100, 150 people?
Right.
And they also have been responsible for hosing down and pushing away people who are tending out on the street near Pavarella House?
Yes.
But that was that has now been produced a lawsuit against either the Pavarella House or the people that are hosing them away, and that's going into court?
That would be the Rescue Mission, basically.
That would be what?
The Rescue Mission.
And Rescue Mission is different than the Pavarella House.
Right. The Rescue Mission run by Larry Arce. You remember he was involved in the lawsuit back during the Kincaid case.
So the Pavarella House has not been, you say they were hosing people away. Are they still doing that?
I'm not 100% sure. Mike Rose went and checked on that, and I'm not sure about if they still are or not. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been down in that area myself.
And, and of course you say that I know there is a new lawsuit that's being formed that has been put forward And that's around against Larry's rescue mission and behaviors there. What's that about?
That's actually against the city.
Against the city. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they did the same thing they did back during the Kincaid case.
Destroying property, or is it about the other issue of sleeping and so forth?
But property, destroying it without destroying it for 90 days. In other words, they totally ignoring the federal judge's order.
And this is a new lawsuit, or this is a lawsuit that simply asks that the order that was issued in 2007 be enforced?
We're asking that the lawsuit that was filed back then be enforced, but they're refusing to acknowledge it, so we're filing a new lawsuit.
Well, what you need to do is simply go in and arrest the mayor and the police chief and drag them before a federal judge.
I think we're in the process of doing that.
Well, I expect that you will do so nonviolently without hurting those two officials, but making sure that they don't escape the jurisdiction.
Right.
We're talking with Al Williams. And Al, I think I'm gonna leave it there today, unless there's something else you want to mention that's coming up, or a particular message you want to put out to people here in Santa Cruz and perhaps elsewhere, maybe listening to the show.
Well, today and the next couple of days, I should find out quite a bit more about what's going on with the housing project and everything. And so in a week or two, I'll get back with you and give you an update on everything.
Right. I'm interested also in whether, and I'd love to see you form a network of people with cell phone numbers who are members of, you know, the Free United Coalition of the Homeless in Fresno, in different encampments. So you have sort of a informational network, a kind of an alarm system, or at least a reporting system, so people could call in and give you reports as to what's going on, whether it's police abuse or weird stuff from other city officials, or even positive stuff about, a new Spanish language classes being held in the teach-ins happening, university professors coming out to join folks in their tents or whatever.
That sounds great.
Amen. Well, listen, get in touch. You know my number. And for folks who want to reach you, is there a contact point or a website you want to leave?
You can usually find us in the Community Alliance newspaper. We have a website up on that anyway. Just punch in Community Alliance. You can write
What is your website?
Hang on a minute. I got a beautiful. We just got a new one.
And we've been talking with Al Williams of Fresno and the Community Homeless Alliance and the Free United Homeless Coalition of Fresno. He is a plaintiff in the lawsuit of 2007 that got the homeless $2.3 million and is now, because it's being violated by the city, has now prompted a second lawsuit, which we'll hear more about in future shows, hopefully. Al, you there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Did you find that website?
I'm checking right now because we got a new one. I'm not. But you can punch in a Community Alliance newspaper and look under homeless, and it'll come up anyway.
So go to Community Alliance newspaper Fresno, and then check for, when you get to that website, check for homeless, and Al's website will come up. Al Williams of the Free United Homeless Coalition, or Coalition of the Homeless. Well, thank you, Al.
All right, thank you.
All right, man.
Again.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's 101.3 FM, and I did promise you that I would give you the secret website. So if you got a pencil, I'm going to go get it here for all of you who are wondering what website, at least I think there's several, but this is one that is actually operational, in case you want to. At least I think it's operational. Boy. One more take a look here. Here we go. All right, it's the http://, which you usually find in front of almost any website, http://, then the word audio in small letters, AUDIO, audio, then dot, then the word stream, but instead of an E, put a 3, the number 3 in the middle. So it's stream, stream with a 3 in the middle instead of an E. Then it's .com, colon, http://listen.p=Peter, L=Larry, S=Sam. Again, http://audio.str3am/5110/listen.pls. And I believe you can also find that if you just go to a browser, as I said before. I'm going to actually double check that right now by going to a browser and see if I can get a website. I'm trying to get the audio stream by putting in Free Radio Santa Cruz, FRSC audio stream. And we find... you don't want to go to freakradio.org. That will no longer get you the stream. So you want to try other places to go. And I'm looking. And I think... Well, it's not immediately obvious. I thought actually this that it was. Boy. Wow. This is depressing. I think one way to get the stream is to check the Santa Cruz Indie Media stories, where I frequently leave references to the fact that I put up when I do a show, and these shows are archived, and you can catch those archives on the Huff website, which is easy to find. It's huffsantacruz.org, H-U-F-F, santacruz.org, small letters, one word. And then you go to the name of the show, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, and that's not hard. You'll see a picture of me looking fat and sassy, and it'll say, listen to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. You'll be able to go there, and it'll give you archives of the show. Those archives, I often reference on the air, on this other website, which is the website where I write most of my articles, for those of you who want to read my fine words. And that's Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is Indie, I-N-D-Y, Bay, B-A-Y, all one word, all small letters, IndieBay.org, O-R-G, slash Santa Cruz, one word, small letters, Santa Cruz. And if you look for Robert Norse, and that's me, N-O-R-S-E, you'll find stories, and on those stories I often reference, and I'm going to try to do it more frequently, the actual stream site, because it doesn't seem to be here easily under... the audio stream. I'm going to try and find it another way, but I'm disappointed here. I think there might be an unusual way to find it. I think I know how to find it. I'm going to give you a special tip here. No, I don't think that works either. So you're just going to have to read my stuff online, or you're going to have to give me a call. And I'm always happy to take phone calls and give you information by phone at the Huff phone line, which is 423-HUFF, 4831 is my area code, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And if you say, what is the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, I'll give it to you. The other way to get it is to go online and look for my stories. You can Google in or Bing in Robert Norse, and you'll eventually find stories where I am referencing the website, and you can find it that way. So let's musically break here, so I can take a breather myself and sort of prepare for the next round of madness. Sarah Marlowe is one of my... Well, I like her a lot. This is an older disc. I've played some of it before, but it's... At least it's got something that sounds vaguely about, you know, human rights and national issues and local issues and such. Let's try this one and see how it floats, or if it floats. The first one actually today from Sarah Marlowe from her album Times Like These. And the name of that sucker was Blind. So, continuing with Free Radio Santa Cruz's best show, Bathrob Spears Broadsides, or let's put it this way, one of the better shows, or a good show. Why don't we just avoid invidious comparisons? I'm Robert Norse, and you can chat at me, chat with me, chat against me by calling in at 831-427-3772. 427-3772. You can also donate to Free Radio. I have a little sign here that says, ask for money at every opportunity. Free Radio Santa Cruz will run out of cash in May. That's only a month away. Now, of course, they always give us these warnings, and we never seem to run out of money. So, you know, you got to be a little skeptical about that. Still, this station does not exist on the hot air of those of us who come in and blow at the mic every, well, I do it twice a week. So, yeah, you know, if you got money and you're able to spare a little of it, you know, give it, fork it over this way to Free Radio so you can hear some of the stuff that you're going to have to otherwise really search around on the internet for, or wait fruitlessly to hear on mainstream or pseudo-alternative radio stations that just don't have what we have, which is me, for one thing. I mean, hey. Although last night I was on KSCO, I got to say that. That was an unusual experience. I haven't been on there for at least a year, I think. You would have thought they would have put me on when they charged me with the most felonies I've ever heard of in my life, at least against me and 10 others, but they didn't. But, you know, that's KSCO. You can never figure. The place to reach Free Radio is, of course, as always, freakradio.org. And you can't get our stream there, but you certainly can donate, get our schedule, get some archives. The archives of my show, as I said before, are at huffsantacruz.org generally. Huff, H-U-F-F, santacruz.org. But freakradio.org is where you can go to donate, or you can send a check to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz. Do that, and you will, you know, if not prolong the life of the station, feel better about your day. You'll be able to say, see, I did something. I may not have gone to jail for justice, but at least I kicked down for continuing to hear about that kind of stuff on the radio. So it's not bad. I also want to give a plug to Becky Johnson's website. Becky Johnson is a longtime homeless advocate and writer. She's currently in losing her housing, desperately needs help herself. In fact, probably better to send her a check than to send one to Free Radio at this point. Although, you know, I have a personal attachment to Becky, and I also really like her writing and her spirit. She's one of the Santa Cruz 11 people who are being persecuted and prosecuted by D.A. Bob Lee for occupying a vacant building along with 300 other people, mostly as reporters and people who are sort of well-known figures in the community. Though I'm still waiting for Catherine Byers, the really well-known figure in the community, to get charged, which is unlikely to happen since she was a contributor to D.A. Bob Lee's election campaign, I hear, back in 2002. But anyway, Becky has a great website, which... She writes caustically. She writes at some length, sort of. That's kind of my style. And she also writes in some detail. Her latest story is D.A. Bob Lee asks the public to turn in friends, neighbors, and family members. And that's something I think I talked about on Thursday. There's a D.A. Bob Lee has got a website now which encourages people to look at photos and videos, identify people, and turn them into the police as criminals or potential criminals who committed the crime of exposing Wells Fargo and its predatory practices way back on November 30th through December 3rd by a peaceful occupation and a temporary occupation of a bank building, a vacant bank building. And that... she writes a story about it, gives a lot of kind of references to this latest snitch website that D.A. Bob Lee has. She also has a story, and I think her stories are necessarily kind of focused on the Santa Cruz 11 situation, since she is one of the Santa Cruz 11. She's probably being evicted from her house because of it. She's also facing employment problems. And a number of people who are dependent on her are also going to be in some destitution if she goes down. It's kind of a domino thing. And it's doubly insidious because we're talking about an attack on the people for political opinions and activity that has nothing to do with crime. The crime, of course, is the prosecution and the persecution, which I've talked about at too great a length in the past. So I'm going to move on from that. But don't, you know, do give a look to the website. She also mentions the ACLU's latest statement supporting the Santa Cruz 11 or denouncing the prosecutions or certainly questioning them. And that's something that actually is worth looking at and worth mentioning because the ACLU, I'm sure you regular listeners know, is the local ACLU. I've had nothing but contempt for what they've been doing, I should say not doing, over the last two decades here in Santa Cruz around the civil rights of homeless people or the lack of civil rights of homeless people or the human rights violations against homeless people.
And the fact that they are coming out is almost entirely due to the activities of one person. And that is the man who I sometimes malign and sometimes praise on Free Radio, Steve Plaich, who is a... He's been working a lot with Occupy Santa Cruz. He's a suicide prevention guy. He also does needle exchange, has the Homeless Persons Legal Project, which he does every Monday at the Red Church between 5 and 7. He also does a the same project at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call what they call the Homeless Services Center, out at 115 Coral Street on Wednesday between 10 and 12. He actually only did that partially last Wednesday when he came to a HUF meeting. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which I mentioned earlier. It's also it's an organization I co-founded, been around for a couple of decades, and we meet every Wednesday concerned about violation of civil rights of homeless people and what's to be done to restore them. A lot of our focus has been on Occupy Santa Cruz activity because Occupy Santa Cruz has provided... Well, it afforded the opening for homeless people to provide for themselves an encampment that lasted 2 months that was self-supporting. And it also got support from the community. So HUF meets every Wednesday from 10 to 12 at the Sub Rosa Cafe. We're still waiting for the Sub Rosa to come out with a strong statement of support for the Santa Cruz 11. Don't be chicken, Sub Rosa. You can do it. Santa Cruz 11, you can get more information soon. There'll be a website about the Santa Cruz 11, which is still fumbling around. We actually are closer to getting it up. You can sign a petition supporting the Santa Cruz 11 to Bob Lee by going on to, I think Becky, it's on Becky's website. Just look for Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking. Google for that. It's all one word, sort of Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking, all slurred together. And you'll find, if you go through the first couple stories, a petition, an online petition that you can sign. I encourage people to do that and pass it on to others who have it so we can get off this silly, costly prosecution and on to something a little more productive and a little more relevant, which was where we were going before. And there was a good article that came out on Thursday, which I think I mentioned online briefly, but it's worth mentioning more. I'm not going to go into the details of it because it kind of speaks for itself. It's the article by John Malkin, Occupy Santa Cruz, and it's called Occupied. And it's a very long article about the phony prosecutions against the Santa Cruz 11, although I don't think he so describes them. He describes actually what happened, as far as he can tell, inside the actual occupation, which is a great idea. I mean, some of the reports are anonymous because a lot of people are afraid of being charged with this. And there's a good article also called A Closed Bank Put to Good Use, which is also on Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking website, which was published way back in December by the Socialist Worker newspaper, and it is a report from inside the building, and you can check that out too. So all these things are available if you want to pick up on them. And in addition to that, there are other things happening that I've noticed. Let's see what they are here. Kind of very quickly, I'm going to really make this a 2-minute update. I'm looking at the clock here. I just want to state that for those who were not or aren't reading Indy Bay, you can get my latest update on the court stuff that happened day before yesterday, Friday. I and Becky Johnson went into court. We were planning to go to a preliminary hearing, which is the thing where you have for felonies, crimes where they send you to prison for years and years and years, or at least a year. And we face 7 years in prison as a potential maximum on these charges. We got the whole thing continued. The preliminary hearings where they decide whether to press the charges. We needed to get video from the district attorney that she has not provided. She has persistently misrepresented when she's going to give it to people. And she has done this at least 3 times. This is Rebecca Young, the DA, who's covering this case. And so we're now set for trial, I think, in mid-May. And you can find more about this on Santa Cruz Indie Media, where I write a series of updates. I did a radio interview last night on KSCO, which I thought of playing on the air, but it's the same stuff I've been talking about endlessly on this station. I don't want to repeat it. If there's a big call for it, I will. It was on the what's it called? Free Radicals show. It's from 8 to 10 every Saturday night on KSCO, which will not allow you to use the words Free Radio Santa Cruz on the air. If you do, they will cut you off. Also, ongoing work on getting a National Lawyers Guild letter going, because apparently the ACLU letter has been quite successful in helping to organize, and it's a great organizing tool for people to support it, even though it's less than what I want. I mean, I'm commending the ACLU, but they don't really call for the dismissal of the charges. They question the value. They said the DA should be very careful not to selectively prosecute people who are critics, like myself, just because they're critics, and should also be very careful not to prosecute reporters like myself, but it doesn't say dismiss the charges, which is, of course, what I'm saying, and I'm hoping you're saying, and I'm hoping the community will be saying, and that I'm hoping is what the National Lawyers Guild will be saying, and we're going to try to get them to endorse a letter to that effect and write a letter to that effect, and hopefully that should be happening in the next week. So, I'm also going to be trying to give you more information about Wells Fargo as it comes to me. There's an occupation that happened, that action that happened in Stockton. There's actually a Fox News report, which I'm not going to play because I'm having technical problems with the station's computer, and you'd only be able to hear a rather degraded version via my computer until such time as I get more ept rather than inept on these devices. But there is something that's been written about it, and that was from April 10th. And this is what the report was. Demonstrators protesting the death of Luther Brown, a Stockton man who was killed in an officer-involved shooting. That means the cop shot him dead, an officer-involved shooting, you know. Friday afternoon, that's a week ago Friday. All right, no, it's... Yeah, a week ago Friday. We're joined by Occupy Oakland and the Oscar Grant Committee Tuesday afternoon. Between 150 and 200 people packed Martin Luther King Park across the street from Stockton City Hall. Around 50 Stockton police officers donned riot gear. Fremont Street between Center and El Dorado Streets was blocked off. Officer Pete Smith told Fox News 40 that a few protesters tried to get the protest revved up and violent, but he said his department was able to have enough officers deployed to prevent that. That's what we call a megaphoning the police department side of the story. I've got no idea what the real story was. Demonstrators are also... The protest is against police brutality. Demonstrators also say what happened to Brown is similar to what happened to Trayvon Martin, the unarmed Florida teen who was shot and killed by a neighborhood watchman. Demonstrators are also protesting the officer-involved death of James Rivera, who was killed in the summer of 2010. Rivera's family says he was unarmed when he was killed by Stockton police. And it's the name of the Stockton police officer who shot that person dead is not here in the story. We don't want to embarrass those police officers, after all. They're upset with Occupy Oakland and blame them for the police response. Police arrested only one person at the demonstration after she sat on the roadway and refused to get up. Angela Hartnell, 27, was arrested for resisting arrest. Maybe that means she went limp. Maybe that means they couldn't think of anything to charge her with, so they decided to use the phrase resisting arrest. Just so something that is a hallowed tradition of police departments the world over. If we don't have a change in the next few years, I'm going to be sure to be running for your seat because I want a change in my city, said one protester. I don't think running for anybody's seat is going to be terribly helpful. But I do want to say that I'm sorry we weren't able to get on the air, although who knows, he may call in. Rocky Anderson, the Denver, Colorado guy, or is it Boulder, Colorado? Anyway, Colorado guy, running for president on the Justice Party. And he was actually here at the, not only at the Resource Center for Nonviolence last night, which I didn't attend, but he also was at the Occupy Santa Cruz General Assembly on the post office steps that I talked about earlier. And he was one of the people who spoke to the police officers encouraging them to avoid unconstitutional behavior, and they eventually agreed and left, as we heard from Danica, who had called in earlier. And I'm going to see if I did try to get a hold of him by phone, because he expressed an interest in coming on this show, but I think it kind of got lost in the shuffle. I had other stuff I had to do yesterday, and so I wasn't able to stay for a long period of time on the General Assembly. There is a website for him, Rocky Anderson, our presidential 2012 official website, and that, of course, would give his perspective on things. I'm always suspicious of politicians, even Green Party or Peace and Freedom Party or whatever politicians, because I'm kind of, not that one shouldn't apply a diversity of tactics, to use an interesting phrase, usually meant to say that when people defend themselves at protests and are attacked by others as being violent because they're being defending themselves, or alternately when they engage in black bloc tactics, like, which rarely happen at Occupy protests, but to divert police from attacking more vulnerable elderly or young people or disabled people. Diversity of tactics is a phrase often used to characterize those kinds of actions. It can also be used to, on the other side, to say, well, sometimes you might want to support political candidates under some circumstances. You might at least want to say right on to their message, particularly if they're also activists. Anyway, Rocky Anderson, who I don't know anything about, really, except I met him yesterday. He seems a distinguished-looking guy. He has this on his website. Rocky Anderson, a lone voice of reason on foreign policy. Actually, there are plenty of voices of reason. They just don't all get together and actually try to do something in a united way, whether it's... sometimes they do actually get together, but it's hard. Ron Paul, Ralph Nader, Dennis Kucinich, who's now going to be losing his seat. People who are, you know, they've gotten a little bit of media, mainly, though, as political people rather than direct action folks or folks who are activists in some other way. But Rocky Anderson, he describes himself as a lone voice. The 2012 presidential field is dismal for those supportive of rational, compassionate foreign policy. Between isolationist Ron Paul, opposing all international treaties and organizations, I'm not aware that's the case, but maybe it is, the continuation of disastrous Bush-era policies Obama has perpetuated, and Romney's presence to reverse Obama's massive defense cuts, and massive spending cuts that don't exist, that is, Rocky stands as a lone voice of reason concerning foreign policy. That's not true. There are plenty of third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh party candidates that do this. And I would really be happy if all these clowns got together and ran as a united front instead of having their own little nest to, you know, their own little kind of tiny bit of the whatever. But in any case, the point is, I'm also glad that people are speaking on these issues, even if they're doing so with the phony claim that they're the only people doing it. There are plenty of, I would say, almost every minority party, well, there are probably a few who don't, but are opposed to the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the proposed war in Iran and intervention in Syria and the Sudan and the Bush-Obama policy of tearing up the Constitution and making everybody a target for assassination at the whim of the president under the drone you down if they don't like you policy, and the National Defense Authorization Act's destruction of habeas corpus. I don't think that you'll find anybody in the third party scene that supports that. Maybe not. Maybe there are some fascist parties that are big on that. But even fascist parties that are out of power are very suspicious of this government, probably because of the color of the president to some extent. But you know, we got idiots everywhere. Anyway, here's an incoming call. Let's hope this is not an idiot. I'm assuming this is a knowledgeable individual. Hi there. You're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, DJ Matter Embryo
you
from Fresno again.
My God, it's good to hear you again, DJ Embryo. What's up?
Hey, I was just going to, yeah, you too. And I was just going to say, like, I agree that sectarianism is a problem, but I wouldn't go so far as to say that people involved in smaller political parties are clowns. I would say that the only clowns really involved in the situation are the two major parties, and even, almost more importantly, anybody who would still consider voting for one of the two parties. It's just such an Orwellian, like, the whole, I mean, just admit to yourself that the thought police have finally taken over if you're still considering voting for those two. And then for anybody who doubts me, just all you have to do is just reread 1984. It's well known.
Well, I kind of have contradictory views on this because, you know, I went off on this riff because I saw this thing on Rocky Anderson's website, a lone voice of reason. What he really means, of course, is compared to the two major parties, he's a lone voice of reason.
Okay.
But I'd love to see him say, I agree with Cynthia McKinney. I agree with Ralph Nader. I agree. You know, instead of this, go for me, because I'm the lone voice. He's not the lone voice. It's full of shit. He's not the lone voice. And so,
Where does the harshness toward Rocky Anderson come from, though? That's not what I'm understanding.
It's not personally against Rocky Anderson. It's against the idea that individuals simply tooting their own horns and misdescribing themselves as the solution. They aren't the solution. The solution is the policies that they're suggesting. And the policies they're suggesting have been suggested by a long line of people who need to be respected, or need to be included, who need to be in a major coalition. Although, then the whole issue arises of, you know, are you going to get anywhere with a coalition like this anyway, in terms of, you know, encouraging people to believe the illusion that the pretense of the current political system actually affords people an opportunity. And because I believe in a diversity of tactics on the left and on the right, I say, sure, do that. And then my contradiction here is, Rocky Anderson comes from a particular tradition and a particular place, and he certainly has a right to express his own unique views, which are probably somewhat different from Ralph Nader's, and somewhat different from, I'm sure, from Ron Paul's, and somewhat different from Cynthia McKinney's, and a bunch of socialist candidates you never hear from, because they haven't got much. But, you know, and I'm glad, because I think every neighborhood has its own perspective, but the problem is, when you try to apply this on a national basis, it's a little different, because nationally, we have one problem. I mean, and the problem is pretty obvious in terms of some of these issues, like the foreign wars.
Yeah, and some of it is centralization. It's a massive problem. I mean, there's much true and not true on all sides, really. You know, because the some of what you have, we have a problem with centralization. We need smaller groups, and some of the way you're analyzing it, as much as we agree, and you are a great guy on these issues, I think you're falling a little bit into the sports mentality, as most people do. And I'm the sports fan here. I'm the one who should be looking at the election like a sports contest. I'm the one who's following the NHL playoffs. You're not even. So what I'm trying to tell you is, who fucking cares? Or one view that's very important, who cares who's going to, quote, win? That's the whole problem, that people want to be on a winning side, and it's a really infantile viewpoint. What we need to do is be focusing on who is the best candidate in a completely pure, strict sense, and stop playing this tiddlywinks with something that's actually important. That being said, sectarianism is a huge problem. I thought of that when Rocky Anderson first started his thing. I was thinking, why didn't he just glom onto the green people and try to hash out the differences instead of starting a new party? I didn't think that was a good tactic. So I think both are true, but to me, it's like, I wouldn't be saying, what is this bullshit of people being sectarian? To me, it's like, however sectarian somebody is, they're still a much bigger part of the solution than anybody who's feeding into the mainstream crap.
Well,
so I kind of save the cussing for the mainstream fuckers, but that's just my way, you know?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, as long as they recognize that the illusion that they're going to get somewhere through this electoral bullshit is an illusion, as long as it becomes an opportunity for organizing people in more direct local ways, I'm all for it. And Rocky, you know, Rocky stood up to the police yesterday with all the rest of the Occupy Santa Cruz people, and, you know, hats off to him and them. And that to me means a hell of a lot more than any theoretical position he presents on any issue, you know. So
No, huh? Yep, we got to be out there supporting what's actually happening rather than theorizing about it. A little bit like I felt with that homeless, you know, symposium, taking all day to like recount the history of homelessness. I'm sorry, but there's some things that don't really need to be like overanalyzed, and I think that's one of them. I think we need really an academic approach to homelessness. We just, everybody, I think, can understand pretty viscerally why it's messed up and how it is and stuff, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you sort of got to start. You're going to spend all your. It's what these sort of thinky groups do that get funded by the government to essentially talk to death the issue rather than to address the issue, because merchants don't want to address the issue. They want essentially to imagine and to press, you know, to enforce the police into moving homeless people out of sight and out of mind. And that they've never gotten beyond that, really. I mean, I guess there are some cities where they're trying alternative approaches, and you can read about that. And I've actually put out some stuff recently, forwarded stuff on that on the Huff email list, which I encourage people to sign up for, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email list. Just give me a call at 423-HUFF or email me at rnorse3@hotmail.com. Yeah. There is a thing, by the way. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you, Robert.
No, that's all right. I interrupt you. You can interrupt me. Let's interrupt
you. Well, and I want to wrap it up because I want to let you keep going. Some of it is, I think of it like sitting, and I'm not even meaning this as in the, you know, as critical a way as I usually seem to, the position I usually seem to take, but not even in a harsh way, but just more of like, it's more of like when we were sitting around at kindergarten, when all the food was put out on the table or like to eat, you know, for lunch or something. It comes down to just like one word, share, like as difficult, you know, is like, you know, to Don Lane and these other folks, whoever they are who put these symposiums together, want to sit down and talk about this to death. Did they ever think of like sharing some a part of their healthy income that they get to help the homeless? It has to do with like some have taken a larger share of the pie. They've glommed onto it independent of color. Even as much as we still have a racist and disproportionately unfair society, I mean, we have Michael Jordan, we have other people in our society, we have Oprah Winfrey, who are true gluttons regardless of color. And it just seems like, you know, why can't we just share? It comes down to that. And I'm disappointed at the immaturity that I see, like, just in a larger framework. Like, it's just disappointing. Like, why people don't want to, I still haven't figured out.
Well,
you know,
I think
why
I can,
don't they
I can
want
speak
to just
myself.
Naturally?
I can speak for myself, and one suggestion is the reason that I don't share when I can at different times is because I invest too much in dead things that I either own or could own rather than in the live people around me who are the real energy and love and life of what's happening. And it's, you know, it's something we're not really trained to do. We're trained to, you know, mine, these are the property lines, blah, blah, blah. And we're trained to, that's one of the whole series of motivations that keep people working for shit wages, paying rents, is because they want to get these little pieces of paper that will enable them to get these little things which supposedly are going to make them happy. And, you know,
even when some others really don't have enough, you know, and you think that it would just be creating an anxiety that even from a selfish perspective, they would just want to ease by simply just sharing, making it so that everybody has enough.
We got the army. We don't need to worry about it. They'll keep the barbarians at bay. I mean, we are a civilization. They've got to work harder. All these mythologies. Anyway, I also want to bring out that, that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, hey, cheers. And, you know, we'll just keep on going. And thanks a lot for what you do, Robert.
If you got any reports from Fresno man, you let me know.
I will, and I keep getting a lot of Occupy reports from around the country, and I forward them to you. I hope they're not completely redundant for you, but I know you've been doubting at times the pulse of the Occupy movement, and it really is happening all around. I think the camping part has been shut down by police action, but that's just one aspect of it. So it's alive. It's happening.
Fair enough. I know we were talking about the Wells Fargo occupation at the shareholders meeting coming up on March 24th. On April 24th. So.
Okay, I know. And that thing again, you know, when there's real crime, it just seems kind of, I come back to just kind of an immature feeling. It almost transcends politics. When there's actual huge crimes going on, to spend a lot of time for some people hanging out of building, it's just kind of sad, too.
No,
you know, it's not only something I disagree with, it's embarrassing almost, that just to be a part of a species that's doing doing that. You know,
I think there's going to be folks hanging out in the April 24th shareholders meeting of Wells Fargo. That'll be good.
Yeah, I know. That seems like a very worthwhile endeavor. And those folks are very amazingly lucky for their personal safety. And I'm a nonviolent person, but I'm amazed at the restraint that people have. I'll just say that it's amazing the self-policing that goes on. Folks who have like their loved ones killed by the police, that they just don't make a bum rush down to the nearest station. It's hard for me to see why people are so restrained as they are, actually. And I think the structure as it exists, they're quite lucky at the undiversity of tactics that's going on. And I like how you talk about it. It has to do with self-defense. This is a diversity of tactics shit. Let's just go back to Malcolm X, and most people, right, left, whatever the hell they are, acknowledge a right to self-defense. We all have it. It's just basic. There's no reason to cower when expressing that to the authorities. We're saying that openly, just like the Black Panthers did. They were about self-defense. They were about arming their communities only to defend themselves. And that's when they were so vilified. You know, really, there was no offensive aspect to those folks at all.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Thanks again.
Cheers, buddy. Bye-bye.
You too. Coming up on Tuesday, day after tomorrow, I've not talked about this at all, is the Project Homeless Connect, which is a one-day shindig at the Civic Auditorium. Which I think, Huff didn't really get too... There wasn't too much interest in attending it, but I'm ready to go to the Project Homeless Connect and do some tabling, particularly since the preliminary hearing that we, Becky and I, had as two members of the Santa Cruz 11 persecution group, it was postponed, and that's going on in May instead of... in the next few days. So if anybody's interested in this Project Homeless Connect tabling with Huff, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and that may spur me to even do some writing, put out a new flyer. You never can tell. It's always good to know that, folks are interested in that kind of stuff, if they are. Let me know. That's my suggestion to folks out there. I'd like to know what's cooking with that. I'm going to take a look at, I think last year I was at Project Connect. We tabled. Actually, it was quite something. We had four or five homeless people and Huff members giving out literature. And I put out a flyer which talked about Project Connect from a critical point of view. Although there's some, it's always nice when homeless people can cut through the red tape. It's always nice, when you can get your driver's license and get some things addressed. But the idea that this is some meaningful thing, if it only happens once a year, to me is a really arrogant and ridiculous statement. And, it's one you want to essentially explode. I mean, you have like 1,000 people who come to this thing at the Civic Auditorium. And one of the things we were thinking about last year was, why not just do a march to City Hall which is right across the street, on the laws that criminalize the homeless. Dare I say, go occupy a building, in a peaceful manner, hopefully in a legal manner. I mean, hey, I don't want to be accused of conspiring on the air. But, that's a traditional tactic that has been used by nonviolent homeless activists throughout the last three decades that I've seen, and by other activists as well, to draw attention to abuses that are being ignored by the authorities. I'm reviewing my files to see if there's a flyer that I can refer back to. And I think it may be hard for me to locate at this point. I will take a quick look under the obvious categories and see what I can find. And I'm afraid, let's see. Take one look here. By the way, if you have any thoughts, you're welcome to call in, 427-3772. Invite you to check things out. Invite you to call in and talk and on any thoughts you may have. Here's the... Yeah, actually, I did find a flyer. And see what it says.
connect with real homeless civil rights, end the endless war on the poor. Santa Cruz authorities and the laid-back liberal surf city still make all nighttime outdoor and vehicular sleeping illegal for its 1,500 to 2,000 homeless population, has emergency walk-in shelter for less than 200 people each night, one half that amount on April 15th. Actually, it's earlier this year that the armory closed. Prescribe a $98 fine. That's gone up to $150 for those who sleep or cover up with blankets at night outside, and a larger fine for those who camp at night. Forbidden zone laws even punish resting on the levee at night. Make 3 unattended citations a misdemeanor, punishable by up to a $1,000 fine and 6 months in jail. Make the 4th unattended infraction an automatic misdemeanor, punishable as above. And I mentioned that there are people who are on trial. And Linda LeMaster is still on trial in the Peace Camp 2010. And, of course, now there are 11 of us on trial for this community center activity, or reporting on this community center activity, or being around and being a public face that the police know at this activity. This invites a Coonertyville, and because Coonerty was the lawyer, it would now be a Laneville, I guess, and invites people to support the Santa Cruz Six in court. And it also criticizes the homeless lack of services center for not setting up a situation where if you are on their waiting list, you get a receipt, your waiting list for a shelter, you get a receipt and you can show it to the police and say, please don't ticket me, I'm on the waiting list, this is the indication that I'm there. If you give me a ticket, even though it's going to be dismissed ultimately by the city attorney, you're going to move me along, you're going to search me, you're going to humiliate me with a phony indication that I'm somehow guilty of a crime when you know I'm not. Because the part of the law is that the sleeping ban now does not apply to those who are on waiting lists of at least 2 private organizations, which, of course, is kind of unconstitutional. Why should you have to join up with a private organization to have your civil rights respected? But that seems to be the Santa Cruz way, and nobody's challenged it. We're too busy fighting felony prosecutions in other places, I guess, or some of us anyway. But I invite people to consider fighting that. And again, if you want to be a part of any tabling or lobbying at Project Connect, and you might want to come down. You'll meet a lot of homeless people at Project Connect, see what's happening there. And who knows, maybe we can organize a mass rally to do something else. We have a caller. Let's see what that caller wants. Yo, caller, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is George. I just want to remind your readers that the Wells Fargo shareholders meeting is in San Francisco on the 24th, Tuesday the 24th, and that a whole bunch of people are going to be protesting the Wells Fargo shareholders meeting because Wells Fargo is the largest capitalized bank, and they need to be hit. The world needs to know about their evilness.
Yeah, you know, I actually, George, talked about that a little bit. Went to the, I guess it's the San Francisco Twitter, Occupy SF Twitter website, where they have they're mentioning there's actually a day before, there's a whole protest from 4 in the afternoon to midnight, although they don't intend to stay overnight on the street, apparently nearby the Wells Fargo Bank. And then the next day there is this shareholders meeting on the 24th of April, which is a week from Tuesday.
Yes, yeah, so the Occupy San Francisco is going to have a teach-in from 4 p.m. till midnight, and like the teach-in will go from 4 to about 8 o'clock, and then there will be movies and a dance party in front of where the Wells Fargo plans to have their shareholders meeting. And then one of the unions is opening up a union hall for people to stay at, and so that they can get up bright and early for the rally at Justin Herman Plaza at 10 a.m. And then the march to the Wells Fargo shareholders meeting.
Now, you know if a lot of folks from Santa Cruz are planning to join this felonious conspiracy? It's a First Amendment activity, which I'm sure, actually, San Francisco authorities seem a little more savvy on this stuff than Santa Cruz authorities, but a lot of folks coming up from Santa Cruz to do this?
I know a few people. I hope that more will know about this. Of course, it's a work day, so a lot of people who work can't take a day off.
Right. Is there a caravan being planned yet, or is anything like that happening?
I would like to see that happen. I don't know of one yet.
Okay. Well, I would encourage people if they're going to go up there and they want to do a caravan to maybe, I guess, come to the General Assembly. Which there's going to be a General Assembly today at 2 o'clock in front of the post office, I believe.
General Assembly is at 2 o'clock in front of the post office. The General Assembly is going to be considering a proposal to endorse the ACLU's statement of support for the Santa Cruz 11. That's what's happening today. And then next Sunday would probably be organizing carpools up to San Francisco for the shareholders meeting.
Which will be the next day, right? Monday will be the party and then or the teach-in.
Monday's going to be the party. The teach-in doesn't start until 4 p.m., so that's something that anyone could take public transportation as well to get up to San Francisco. And then, of course, the rally starts early. Peaceful protest training starts at 8 a.m. at Justin Herman Plaza. And then the rally is at 10 a.m. With the march. The shareholders meeting doesn't even start till 1 p.m., I believe.
So that would be the next day, Tuesday the 24th, right?
Tuesday the 24th at 1 p.m. is when the shareholders meeting starts. So it's going to be like all-day affair in front of the Wells Fargo.
Now, have you been to one of these, George, have you been to one of these nonviolent training things up in San Francisco or down here? I mean, I think it's been many years since I have. I mean, I consider my, you know, I don't really, I consider it kind of over training to try to go to a nonviolence training, but maybe I've been missing something. What, have you seen any of these things, been to any of these nonviolence training?
Yeah, the 99% Spring had a training last night over on a Seabright at a church, and there were about 100 people, and basically what they try to teach people to do is stay calm in the face of situations where you normally get angry and react in a bad way. You want people to be calm in front of authority and police lines. And
how do they do this? What kind of tactics do they use to try to encourage people to do this or role play through it or whatever?
Yeah, they role play. So they divide the room, say, up into bank tellers and protesters, and so you get to play being a bank teller and being nasty, and you get to play on the other side you play a protester, and then you switch roles.
People get to be, you know, pepper sprayed and maybe have their property stolen and things of that sort? It happened to UC Davis recently. It hasn't happened in Santa Cruz to occupy people, but people's property has definitely been taken and not returned. So,
yeah, well, I haven't been to a role-playing situation where they pull out the mace and spray you in the face. Basically, the ground rules are don't even touch on the role-play. I've been to one where the cops were allowed to drag the protesters across the room.
Well, you know, I would call it a diversity of tactics role-playing thing that happened back in the late 90s when there was, I guess, training for the Seattle stuff, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And they, you know, they were advising people on how to deal with arrests in terms of how police are likely to be kind of, you know, pulling people aside, trying to turn them against each other, how to deal with police coming up and or media coming up and asking you questions and trying to, you know, essentially being able to pick and choose the worst things you say, so that people were told just simply to repeat three things again and again and again to every question, so that the media would be stuck with those three things. There was also some physical stuff as to how to, I don't know, go into a ball if you're being kicked and beaten. Things of that sort. I guess you didn't have much of that at this particular thing you went to last night?
The one I went to last night, from what I could tell, were people who are pretty new to it. So there was no how to get arrested training. It was more how to deal with the verbal confrontation situation. You know, I personally, the more of these trainings that someone goes to, the better, because you get to experience it when you're among friends, because you can think about what you would do when you're not in front of a friend, when you're actually in front of a actual live person who's being hostile to you.
Was there any police role playing in this stuff? Because that's ultimately what some of this boils down to, is how you deal with armed people with lethal force in mass who are suddenly giving you orders that go against what it is you feel you have a right to do, and also what your objective is, which is to, you know, are intending to, you know, risk arrest.
Yeah, in fact, in this, the group that did the May Day, May 1st role-playing, I was one of the cops, and then the protesters were going where the cops didn't want them to go, but the rule was not to touch. We didn't get physical.
Now, you also, George, you were at the General Assembly yesterday when police officers and a postal employee directed people to abandon their rights and vacate the public space, right?
Well, you know, the person who said you've got to leave, there was a guy who came out from the post office. He could have been getting mail from his mailbox because he did not identify himself as a postal employee. He wasn't wearing a uniform. So this random guy comes out and tells us, you've got to leave. You can't be here. And then he gets on his cell phone and calls. The police show up. The first police officer says, you know, this is private property. Then I guess they called the shift supervisor over, and the shift supervisor observed the sign and said that, you know, it's posted no trespassing from 7 p.m. to 1 a.m. or whatever, but we were there during legal hours, and the second police officer said that it was a public space, but the man did not identify himself as a postal employee having any right to tell us to leave.
Yet the police officer came and told you to leave as well, I'm told.
Well, the first police officer came, and then his boss came and corrected him.
Right, but I mean, you would have thought he would. There actually is this interesting YouTube, or this stream that
stream video.
Yeah, that Abby has put up on Facebook, or the Occupy Santa Cruz Facebook, and I just. You know, I think it's very revealing that the police officers have no understanding of the constitutional rights. I mean, the most obvious situation is that it's a public space, and then the, you know, people. I mean, I suppose in some theory the post office became a nonprofit corporation under the Nixon administration, but it's still, you know, it's a government supported institution that's losing a lot of money every year because of the internet. But in fact, you know, it's a public space. And what I found interesting, though, about this whole thing is that people, you know, took different positions. They used different arguments, as people will when they're confronted with authority and threatened with, you know, being humiliated, forced to leave, forced to abandon their principles, and possibly threatened with arrest as well. The idea is suddenly saying, you know, oh, look at the sign. Well, the sign is, again, a violation of civil liberties. We know, for example, signs around the courthouse, which are setting up a curfew, were things ignored by many Occupy, or they're regularly ignored by Occupy Santa Cruz people when they hold their General Assembly. And the idea that people in the Occupy here would forget that they are ignoring the signs over at the courthouse and somehow point to this sign as though, see, we're following the law, it's kind of contradictory, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, these signs probably are unconstitutional. The history of authority is to write laws that are unconstitutional and then have them struck down in court. But I mean, over the past 200 years, lots of laws have been written by legislatures and municipalities that violate the Ten Amendments. If you go into a law library and look on the section for case law for the first 10 amendments. It's huge. I mean, the case law for the welfare code is like one book, and then the case law for our Bill of Rights is huge. This is historical. That the authorities write laws that violate the Constitution, and they have to be struck down. You have to stand up and say that and this is an unjust law.
Well, the authorities, yeah, agreed. The authorities have their games and that history of the authorities, pretexts, excuses, gambits, trips, traps, and snares is, you know, interesting. And I'm fascinated with that whole thing. But in a way, it's all kind of a diversion. What I notice, though, is I'm wondering if Occupy Santa Cruz folks are, in their own way, perhaps even without even realizing it, backing down. Instead of saying, there's no curfew at the post office, and certainly not during the day, they're saying, oh, look at the sign, we have a right to be here because it's legal, as though if they put up a sign that said, be away 24 hours a day, that would be an okay basis for driving them away, which is ridiculous, plus the fact, as I said before, that people have already been arrested. Occupy Santa Cruz people have been arrested and are regularly ignoring on Tuesday and Thursday nights the 7 o'clock curfew at the courthouse, which is also backed up by signs that say you can't be here after 7 o'clock, no trespassing, the same kind of thing, admittedly a different code section, but the same essential violation of the Constitution. And my question is, do you think that Santa Cruz, the Occupy people, are backing down from their previous position, or it just, I mean, they certainly didn't back down and they stayed where they were staying, but their arguments indicated, and then discussions with, you know, the police officers saying, well, these are necessary laws to deal with those homeless campers. Well, those homeless campers were the people that Occupy Santa Cruz supported, and were supporting them back in December. Is there a retreat here?
What I saw yesterday was that they didn't retreat. They did not acknowledge that person's authority to tell them to leave. They stayed. They did not acknowledge the first police officer's authority to.
Well, I agree with you. No, I mean, interrupt you, George. I mean, I agree with you on that. That's for sure. And I commended the courage even of the political person, Rocky Anderson, who was there, a political candidate. And I commended you and everybody else who was there. You were one of the people who, as I saw from the video stream, just sat on the steps ignoring our fine police force. But, you know, what I'm saying is the argument used by people seemed to be a retreat from the argument that people were believing back in December, which is, there is no curfew here. Fuck off. You know, we have a right to be here. They have to say fuck off, but they can say, sorry, the Constitution allows us. Or, you know, when they told, get a permit for the San Lorenzo Park, the Constitution is our permit. Has there been a retreating from that position, do you think?
I'm not sure. I think
I'm not either. You know, I think it's something that just came up, and I noticed it, and I think people, you know, if they talked about it some more, would have said, I mean, I guess they were talking about the obvious. Well, what are you doing? There's a, you know, even if you're following these stupid signs, the sign says only at night. You know, and in fact, if people were meeting there at night, they would have probably said, no, we're going to meet here anyway. You know, I think. Because we do it at the courthouse and we do it here. I mean, we believe we have a right to be in a public place to assemble. That's a fundamental part of Occupy. If you can't camp, well, for God's sake, at least you've got to be able to assemble.
Oh, I agree. The right to assemble and to petition your government for redress of grievances is fundamental freedom that the Founding Fathers believed in. They created the Ten Amendments because of the abuse.
Well, at least
British.
If you weren't a slave or a woman or a working person, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, that's right. But now the Ten Amendments apply to everyone. In fact, the 14th Amendment says that the states can't take away
particularly,
the rights given.
Yeah, particularly corporations.
Well,
I'm sorry. I, you know, all these arguments about law seem so ridiculous to me at some level, although I'm a big fan of the history of this stuff, because it gives you the illusion that somehow you can chart the course of forward progress. And I wonder how much that is real and how much that's an illusion. But I tend to go along with you that, you know, I like to think of there being a series of advances. But then I look at the fact that, you know, your wages are dropping and your rights are disappearing and, you know, you're getting killed from the air by drones and you're spending more and more on foreign wars. And I think, what the fuck? There's no, you know, come on. Let's be real about what's really happening here. So.
Yeah, I mean, the public officials are have to swear to defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. And I'm wondering if some of these, some of the enemies of the Constitution are some of our elected officials.
Don't wonder. I mean, there's no need to wonder. In fact, that's what, you know, historical figures of who have some sense, and I don't want to. I hate to talk about our founding fathers or, our ignored founding mothers. There are a few of them too. You don't get to read much about them because they didn't get published much. But you know, Mary Wollstonecraft and I guess Abigail Adams and people that you don't get to hear much about who were strong in their own way, activists fighting. But they're. Anyway, I'm getting lost in my own lostness. I thank you for the update on the Wells Fargo actions coming up, and I'm, I'll be talking about it more on Thursday. I do a show Thursday 6 to 8 for those who don't know.
Yeah,
and
we need to get the message out on the evilness of Wells Fargo and that too big to fail is too big to exist.
Too big to jail, that's what they say, right?
Too big to jail and too big to exist. I mean,
now are we? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what it is. Too big to fail is too big to exist. I wish we could jail them.
Any events coming up? I know, George, you're one of the administrators on the Occupy website. Are you anything you've noticed that you want to mention as far as folks who might want to be a part of various working groups that are meeting in the next week or so?
There's going to be a tax day thing on the courthouse steps on the 17th. That's not put on by Occupy Santa Cruz, but it's happening.
What time would that be?
I think it's for. I have to put it up on the website. I haven't yet.
That's the 17th. Would be day after tomorrow. Yeah.
17th is Tuesday. Tax day comes on Tuesday the 17th this year because there's a holiday. In the District of Columbia on Monday the 16th, and the 15th falls on a Sunday. So the day that you're required to file your taxes is the Tuesday the 17th, and there will be a gathering, I guess, before the General Assembly at 6. The General Assembly will be at 6, and I believe that the tax day protest will start around 4-ish.
Well, I understand aren't there two protests happening? One is on the courthouse steps and the other is on the post office steps. The courthouse steps is where on Tuesdays and Thursdays the Occupy Santa Cruz has its general assemblies at 6 o'clock, right?
The courthouse steps is Tuesday and Thursday at 6 p.m. General Assembly.
Right, and is there? I heard there were two protests. I mean, there was a number of people who didn't like the idea of going to a Move On sponsored protest, primarily because Move On seems to be an arm of the Democratic Party's Reelect the War Criminals campaign, a Reelect the Bankbusters, because we have a nice, pretty Democratic Party label on we support abortion rights. You know,
I wasn't aware of the second protest on the courthouse steps. I really think these groups need. When they have common ground, they should get together and not separate like that.
Perhaps so. I mean, I know the raging grannies, I don't know if you were present for this meeting. They came to a meeting about a week ago of Occupy Santa Cruz and urged people to come to a protest, and they said that Move On had withdrawn, and therefore that everybody said, okay, we're in. But I hear what you're saying about sectarianism, and for some reason, though, when, you know, getting into a Move On protest that's a support rally for Obama, unless it's primarily on an issue, is something that turns my stomach and is also something I don't want to support, you know.
Yes, but going going after explaining to the public the evilness of Wells Fargo, you know.
Right, but that's not what's happening on the tax day rally, is it?
Well, I mean, I don't know what they're saying on the tax day
rally.
Yes,
that's the question. I think that's really the relevant issue. I think you're right. You have to get beyond. I mean, you know, if the Republican Party is going to come out against the National Defense Authorization Act, then I'll be with the Republican Party on that issue, you know. But the fact of the matter is, you know, if this oftentimes as we get closer and closer to elections, these are I'm getting a lot of, you know, robo phone calls from Democratic Party hacks or people I suspect to be Democratic Party hacks. Maybe I'm a little paranoid. Who knows? I don't know. I appreciate your calling in, George. Anything you want to add? Any other things happening in the next week around Occupy? Should I go to the Occupy website and take a look?
Definitely go to the Occupy website at OccupySantaCruz.org and check the calendar. The calendar is a Google calendar, so you can actually add it to your own Google calendar if you have a Google calendar of your own. And then it'll show up on your Android phone.
If I only knew what all those words meant. No, I mean, yeah, I'm going to have to actually sit down with you one of these days and you can say, now, Robert, you punch this key and that, take a breath and punch the next, and that sort of thing. I see you have a proposal to endorse the ACLU's statement of support on the Occupy website. And
that like I said, that proposal will be discussed today at 2 p.m. at the General Assembly at the post office.
And there's actually a, I guess today, in 10 minutes, there's going to be a strategy working group meeting, and that is happening at the county courthouse in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, and that would be on the west steps, and it's hosted by Ed Fry.
Right, and I see here. Then there's a reach out meeting on Tuesday, which is.
I didn't know that was Tuesday. I thought that was.
Well, that's what it says on the calendar. It says Tuesday on April 17th at 7:45 to 9:30, and that's happening at what we call the Occupy Foreclosed House at 418 Front Street. It's a group of socially compassionate individuals. Boy, this
well, that's total news to me.
it's on the
someone
website.
Someone else put that on the calendar then.
And their reach in, reach out is, I guess, some kind of a it's a meditation thing. We get to learn how to meditate on the crimes of the. There's a Huff meeting at 10 o'clock on Wednesday. There's a May 1st organizing meeting on Wednesday at 6 o'clock for those who are interested. And that is going to be, again, at 1418 Mission Street? It's right next to Cafe Brazil for those who are interested. And they're organizing a direct action working group and other affinity groups are organizing for. What's happening on May 1st? Do you have any sense about that, George?
The university is working on a May 1st action. They were discussing a May 1st action at the 99 Spring meeting last night. And Occupy Santa Cruz is working on some sort of May 1st action. And I hope they get together and coordinate what they're doing.
Is there some sort of general strike thing or occupation being planned up in Oakland and San Francisco? Do you know anything about that?
For May 1st?
Yes.
Basically, Occupy San Francisco is going to rally at noon at Justin Herman Plaza with the intention of going over to Oakland for the main. Oakland is the place to be for if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. And the Oakland stuff starts at 3 o'clock, Oscar Grant Plaza.
That's on May 1st.
That's on May 1st.
And there's going to be, of course, but San Francisco is the place to be on April 23rd and 24th.
San Francisco is the place to be on April 23rd and 24th.
That's the Wells Fargo shareholders
and
meeting.
It seems that San Francisco, Occupy San Francisco and Occupy Oakland seem to be competing a bit, but they are coordinating their efforts, so they're not going to step on each other. So San Francisco at noon on May 1st and then Oakland at 3 p.m. on May 1st. If you don't want to partake in the than the local May 1st stuff in Santa Cruz.
Go up there. Well, an interesting also coming up, I guess, locally on Wednesday night is the Occupy Santa Cruz movie night. That's 8 p.m. to 11. Illegally in violation of the curfew on the courthouse steps. Is that correct?
I just got notified that Wednesday night's not going to happen. It's been postponed for another week. And I have not got the explanation for that.
That's interesting.
So that I need to update that, but I haven't found the reason that it's been changed. I'm going to go to General Assembly today to find out what that's about.
All right. Well, listen, George, I appreciate all the updates. And again, if folks want to catch at least some of this and, you know, be prepared to see some of these dates change, apparently, because, you know, there's some apparently difference of opinion here, go to the OccupySantaCruz.org website. And also for, you know, if you're interested in the stuff that you were talking about earlier, on the confrontation on the courthouse, I should say post office steps, successfully resisting an attempt to remove the General Assembly yesterday, you can check that out on the Facebook page for Occupy Santa Cruz.
Hey, yes, and you know, it might happen today. When it happened 3 weeks ago on Saturday, they were only there on Saturday because it was rainy, and after they had the first confrontation 3 weeks ago, they immediately voted to have all future General Assemblies, Saturday General Assemblies, on the post office steps just to assert their right to be there.
Commendable.
Yes.
I think that's the only way that you can empower people. And I think it goes beyond what actually happened on that Saturday 3 weeks ago and the Saturday yesterday, because people hear about that. And also police officers hear about that, and they come to understand that they can make mistakes, and the merchants aren't always right, and the employees who want to drive away the protesters or the homeless people, or whoever it may be, you got to be careful. And I know that, for example, I've seen a really ridiculous violation of civil rights, for example, at Trader Joe's, where ACLU members or ACLU organizers trying to get people to sign petitions have been arrested, or well, they've been cited, or they've been threatened with arrest, and they've been driven away from the area at the main entrance of Trader Joe's that borders on their parking lot in downtown Santa Cruz. And that goes on regularly now. The people, protesters are driven away in spite of the famous Pruneyard decision from 1980, way back in the Cupertino Pruneyard shopping center, that said, you know, you can be in, they have to allow you some place in a shopping center to be able to engage in First Amendment activity. Not in Santa Cruz now, apparently. Not in Santa Cruz. So,
well, if you don't assert your right, they'll take them away from you.
Ignore your rights and they'll go away. Yep,
exactly.
That's true. Thank you, George. Anything you want to add?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Bye.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. 427-FRSC is the phone line. You are tuned to 101.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, a long Sunday show that will probably end around 1 o'clock and will be followed by the Making Contact and then down the road, Law and Disorder, plus a few other surprises and treats. We have a caller. Yeah, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello, this is Stuart Alexander calling with the Peace and Freedom Party and the Socialist Party USA.
Oh, hey, welcome, Stuart Alexander. You aren't with the Justice Party, though, are you?
No, I'm not. I received this invitation. Maureen Smith contacted me this morning, and she asked me to give you a call and share some of the platform issues and share what the Socialist Party USA and the Peace and Freedom Party is doing for the 2012 election.
Okay, well, let me give me a little background before we start. You're Stuart. You're the candidate, or you're a supporter.
I am the candidate.
And you're a candidate for president.
I'm the nominee already for the Socialist Party USA. That's for president of the United States, and that's with my vice presidential nominee with that party, with the Socialist Party, is Alex Mendoza. And also with the Peace and Freedom Party, I'm seeking their nomination in August. at their state convention to be their presidential nominee as well.
Well, let me ask you this. Socialist Party, or the Peace and Freedom Party, third-party candidates in California have a hell of a time getting and staying on the ballot. Is that accurate?
Yes. You have to understand many of the ballot access laws that they have in many states makes it very prohibitive for third-party candidates and also third parties. Some states requiring tens of thousands and well over 100,000 signatures just to get on as a candidate, and also some parties getting on as a party, qualifying as a party, is also it's totally ridiculous. And I believe in California, it's 172,000 signatures required just to become a candidate, and I believe it's 117,000 as a party to qualify as a party to be on the ballot.
Now, are you a native yourself, or at least a resident of California? Or?
Well, I've been in California for approximately 45 years, so I almost feel like the first time I came to California to live was in 1959. And for the most part, I've been in California from that time forward, with a very brief time that I lived in Virginia, where I'm native from Newport News, Virginia, and also lived for a very brief time in Tampa, Florida.
Now, you had a Maureen Smith and Mike Smith and others sponsored a rally at the Resource Center for Nonviolence where you had a debate or discussion with, what, three other candidates?
It was a debate with three other candidates. It was last night, and that was with Rocky Anderson, also Steve Durham, and Peter Lindsay. And that was last night that we had here in Santa Cruz.
Did you disagree?
It was a very lively debate.
Was it recorded, you know? Can folks actually hear it if they want anywhere? Or?
I believe it was recorded. And in addition to that, they had tapings for it, which they had mentioned that it will be on the Internet. So I'm not exactly sure where that can be found at this time, but for certain it will be on the Internet.
If you get that information, I encourage you to give me an email at rnorris3@hotmail.com, and I'll try to give you that. Maybe give me your email address for those who want more information about you and your party.
Well, to go on for the party for the Socialist Party USA, I should say for the Stuart Alexander and Alexander Mendoza campaign, they need to go to Stuart Alexander for President 2012.org. And that's Stuart Alexander for, that's FOR for President 2012.org. And this information in regards to if people would like to send an email or any correspondence with the campaign.
So, Stuart, rather than ask you for your position as a party candidate, let me ask you this. Did all of you have essentially a similar... First of all, who are these other three parties? Can you name who they are in terms of the parties?
Well, Rocky Anderson, he's representing the Justice Party, which is a newly formed party, I believe, within the last 2 years.
Right.
And also you have... And also previously he was a mayor in Salt Lake City, Utah. We also have Stephen Durham, which he has been with the Freedom Socialist Party for a number of years, and he has also been affiliated with the Peace and Freedom Party as well. And we have Peter Lindsay, which she is with the Party for Socialism and Liberation, which they are very active not only in California but other parts of the country as well.
Now, are four of you supporters of the Occupy movement, for example?
Yes, we are. All four are very supportive of the Occupy movement. Myself, I have been very supportive in the Riverside area, San Diego area where I'm from. I'm from Riverside County. And in addition to that, I know Peter Lindsay, she's been very supportive of the Occupy movement throughout California and also in other parts of the country as well. Just recently, I was in New York for the Left Forum, and that gathering had approximately around 3,000 people there. But the point is, it was very close, within blocks of where the Occupy movement was centrally located, right there in New York City. And I did, I had some activities, I engaged in some activities there at that location as well. But I know three in particular: Stephen Durham with the Freedom Socialist Party, Peter Lindsay, and myself. We have all been engaged in that. I know just from comments that I've received from Rocky Anderson, he has been very supportive of the Occupy movement and understand and support the significance of that.
What do you think, and this is not really a question about your presidential campaign, I apologize, I'm an anti-political kind of person these days, and I'm interested more in what people are willing to do to defend civil liberties right here and now, not after I don't get elected, but, you know, right here and now, what they're doing to mobilize people to support workers' rights, you know, disabled rights, the rights of homeless people, right now, tomorrow, the next day, in the midst of their campaigns. That interests me rather than any theoretical positions or differences of opinion or arcane debates at forums. I'm interested in that intellectually. You know, it's kind of interesting to look at. But really, the question is, you know, when the rubber meets the road, what are you doing? What have you done in the last few months in terms of actually having experiences that are helpful for the rest of us, like myself, for example, facing two felonies and two misdemeanors for essentially walking into a vacant building, reporting on it, and leaving? And I've been, you know, in the midst of that campaign for the last 2 months. What concretely... I'm kind of looking for what you share with these other candidates, because I'm, as I said earlier to someone on the air, you probably didn't hear it because, you know, you just tuned in, or you just called in, but I'm wondering, you probably have a similar position on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, right?
All four of us, we are very opposed to both wars, and we are very opposed to U.S. imperialism, as we continuously see that U.S. influence spreading throughout the world. With many of the bases that all of us are support need to be, those bases need to be shut down, and also scaling back the U.S. The expenditures and the expense that is being made on U.S. military aggression, and also building up the U.S. military, not only here in the U.S. but worldwide. And we believe those funds can be better utilized toward taking care of many of the needs here at home, such as protecting Medicare, Medicaid, making certain that students can be able to receive a free education, because we can understand that the cost of education, not only here in California, but nationwide, it is making it almost impossible for students to continue to receive education where they can be able to move ahead in life.
Now, you're also opposed. Let me interrupt you for a second here, because sure. I want you answered my question. You're also, I assume, all opposed to the huge bank bailouts that happened in the last 4 years.
Oh, very opposed to that. You have to realize that many of the problems that we had with the 2008 crisis, financial crisis, economic crisis in this country, the banks were the ones that created it.
Right.
And they were the ones who received the reward.
Yeah,
so
yeah, for
there's
sure.
There's something definitely wrong with that picture.
Right, and so we all agree with that. And you also are all opposed to the National Defense Authorization Act that strips everybody of their right of habeas
corpus. And let's go back even to the Patriot Act. You know,
right.
These acts are in clear violation of the U.S. Constitution.
All four of you are opposed to all of these things, correct?
These are criminal acts.
Right, but all four candidates, each of the four candidates.
All four candidates.
So, you know, for my money, instead of debating and discussing who should get, you know, 0.02% of the vote in the presidential election, why not all of you march together on this platform into, not so much into voting, although I suppose voting is an option to eventually there'll be a one vote situation everybody gets in November, if you
get
on the ballot, where you get on the ballot. But there are obviously many, many forums you're going to be going to, and occupy places where people are going to be taking direct actions against these very issues and the people who the criminals who are who are essentially presiding over these behaviors. Why not mobilize around that?
I might mention that we still have a democratic process that we believe in within the Peace and Freedom Party and also the Socialist Party USA. Unfortunately, the two corporate parties, they don't believe in a democratic process anymore, and I don't know if they really ever did. We were under the illusion that they did. So part of that democratic process is we have this procedure where we have nominations for the Peace and Freedom Party, which will be coming up in August of this year, and that way it will have a focus not only on one candidate, but it will have a focus on that person that will best represent the Peace and Freedom Party going forward, and also being able to discuss what the issues are and how we intend to deal with these many social issues on a party-wide
level. Let me stop you here. I mean, you all agree on the base, all four of you. You're talking about one party, one particular, the two parties that you're trying to represent, and I'm talking about the...
Well, it's four parties there.
But there were four parties there. Are these four parties all going to be having a unified convention, in August to come up with one candidate, or they're all going to have four separate conventions and four separate candidates?
Well, the thing is, the Peace and Freedom Party is a multi-tendency party, and I might mention that... such as Rocky Anderson, he's with the Justice Party. He has already been nominated by that party. Peter Lindsay has already been nominated as the president.
So you're all going to be competing against each other in the election. That's what you're saying.
Right. Say, for instance, even if you early on, if you wanted to run as a candidate for the Peace and Freedom Party, and I'm not certain what your political affiliations are, you could have entered yourself as a potential candidate.
You're missing
party.
My point,
this
though.
This is what democracy is about.
You're missing. No, democracy is not about whether you can run in a small political party, get into a party, and then go nowhere with it. Democracy is about whether we can restore these four basic things we already talked about: ending the wars, ending the bankster stuff, restoring the basic constitutional rights. These are the issues of democracy. Not spending a lot of time on what I regard as sectarian politics.
Well, I have to disagree with you, because I have to say democracy is the people having a voice, the people having a say, so people being able to elect their representatives, not the representatives that are placed there by the two corporate parties, having media that is able to articulate what the will is.
You're not talking about what I'm talking. I'm asking you, what's the point of having four people running against each other on identical platforms? What's
the point? We don't have identical platforms.
Well, let me put it this way. On those four issues, you certainly do, don't you?
On those four issues.
Aren't those the most important issues?
Let me finish, but you have to realize the platform is more than just four issues.
Aren't those...
As Rocky Anderson mentioned with the Justice Party last night, he says he agrees with 98% of our platform. I'm assuming that he agrees with 100% of the platform of the Justice Party. So there is a 2% difference.
Why fight over the 2%? Isn't the 98% or the 99%, if you're an Occupy person, more important than the 1% or the 2%?
Well, sometimes 2% can make a big difference, especially when you're talking about critical issues such as the NDAA, when you're talking about the Patriot Act. You say, what is the significance of just two acts? Well, two acts can make the difference of you having...
You both oppose those two acts. All four of you oppose those two acts. All four of you oppose the wars.
What I'm saying is legislation and how it is being represented by the people that we elect is very important when it comes to critical issues. And we're dealing with many critical issues today that are very important, that we have representatives that will articulate, not 98%, but articulate 100% what is in the best interest of the American
people. Let me ask you this, because I want to get past the political rhetoric. I really hate it when I hear political rhetoric. Wouldn't you rather have any one of those four people, yourself or any of the three others, than Obama or Romney for president in November?
Definitely.
For sure.
That's a no-brainer.
So what the hell difference does it make which of you gets in power as long as one of you does?
Well, let me give you an example. You know, I would say any of those, and that's a fair question, and I hope that you perceive my answer as a fair answer.
Go ahead.
But let me give you an example. If I were looking at the candidates who were represented there last night, I would say Rocky Anderson, basically, he spent his whole life as a Democrat. Myself, I was a Democrat for 22 years, but for the last 14 years, I've been a socialist candidate. I don't believe at this point and where we're at in moving forward as a nation, we don't need to have political reforms. We need to have a complete transformation in our political process from what we see that has taken place over the last 30 and 40 years ago. Within the last 30 or 40 years, and we need to move toward a democratic process that is relevant for the needs of working people. We don't have that today, and that's what we need.
You're not answering my question. You're being a politician. Don't do it.
Okay, what is your question? Because I believe I'm answering
your question. Why not? You've already said you'd rather have one of the four of you than any of the two clowns who are running, the big boys.
I'd rather that.
No question about that. And yet, you know, now you want to spend your time sniping about the differences between the small parties. I mean, why? Why not simply form a coalition that fights for the basic issues and then says, yeah, we have our differences, and there are going to be differences, you know, but if we agree on these basic issues, we're four times as strong as we would be individually.
Well, I don't set up the procedure that is used for the nomination process. It's determined by a democratic process. That question should go to the body of the State Central Committee for the Peace and Freedom Party and also for Sacramento to determine what that process is. I think it's a very fair political process, but for me to say that all that has been set up, put in place by the State Central Committee of the Peace and Freedom Party and what has been put in place by the California legislature. In other words, I can't make a decision on that. That's a democratic process.
But you really can't.
Right,
but the issue for all of you.
And what you're saying is let's just take a shortcut and just do it a different way. That's not what democracy is about.
Don't you want basic reform? Isn't that the kind of sensible approach that makes more sense than sectarians? That's not democratic.
I'm not talking about reform. If you want to talk about reform, let's move to the Green Party. I'm talking about taking revolutionary.
But I'm saying, if you're talking about real change, I'm talking about a shortcut for real change.
Yeah, reform. And that's
no, that's not a reform.
You're
talking about playing by the rules of the current political system, are you not, Stuart? You're talking about, we can't do it because of the Peace and Freedom Party's rules. We can't do it because of the Sacramento rules. We can't all of us four candidates stand up and say, this is a bunch of crap. We agree on these four issues. These four issues are more important than any disagreements between us.
Well, the thing is, you have to realize millions of Americans are standing in agreement on those same issues.
And
so,
we
collectively, not only the four candidates, but you can probably include another 150 million Americans standing in agreement with that.
Yeah, which goes to prove my point even more strongly. They do not want to have to choose between four people who are saying the same thing and essentially competing with each other.
Well, the benefit of programs such as yours, you give me an opportunity where I can come on your program, and I can share with people what my views are, the views of the Peace and Freedom Party, the Socialist Party USA, and hopefully, once I receive the nomination for the party, I can receive that support come November 6th of 2012.
Except for those who will vote.
I appreciate this invitation.
Sure, and except for those who will vote for the people who are pushing for exactly the same thing you are.
Now tell me, invite me back on your show.
And split the vote three ways. You know, I mean, you know, I hear you. Your objective is to, you know, you're really narrowly focused, and I can appreciate it because that's what, you know, what you're
It's all about a process that I didn't put in place. It's all about a process, a democratic process,
you know,
it's not a democratic process. I'm sorry. It's not a democratic process. It's a plutocratic process. It's a process that's run by money. It's a process that's rigged against you, and you know it, and so do I, and so does everyone else. So let's not pretend, you know.
It is rigged. I agree with
you. Yeah, for sure.
We do agree on that. It's totally rigged.
Yeah. And so it seems to me that if you can find shortcuts, use them, you know.
Right. But you didn't answer my question. Are
Which
you going to invite me back on your show?
Go ahead. What's your question? Well, of course you're invited back.
Now, remember, we have the June 5th primary election, which is coming up in just a few more weeks. And also we have the November 6th election, which would be the general election.
Yeah.
And shows such as what you have here is very good for me, not only to get out information about the Peace and Freedom Party, which I am very supportive of the party, but also to talk about and share those critical issues, which I have mentioned just briefly.
So let me ask you this. Again, I, frankly, you know, I'm very cynical about this whole political process. I know that none of you are going to win. But I know that the issues you're raising... Let me finish. The issues you're raising are very, very important. And I share with you a belief in all those issues. And that's why I am so annoyed when you keep essentially ducking and sidelining. You know, why don't you four get together and do something? But, well, it's not allowed by the Peace and Freedom Party.
How will we get together? Tell me. How will we get together?
I don't know.
I do not know.
But I know that you need to find a way to do it, because if you don't, you're nipping at each other instead of, I mean, you are all raising very important issues, and I will continue to allow you invite you to come on here as a forum. But here you're talking to the converted. I mean, everybody, most people who are listening to this radio show already agree with these issues. The real question is, how do we implement them independently of a rigged political process? And we, you know, obviously new methods have been things like Occupy Santa Cruz, labor unions that are working, marches, protests, pickets, takeovers, occupations. What's coming up in the next few months, independently of what I regard as a, you know, useless and hopeless political process that is not a democratic process? I think you do a disservice to real democracy when you claim it's a democratic process. It's not.
Well, what we need to do first of all, which you're probably very aware that's presently in the courts, is this Proposition 14. Basically, Prop 14 was to outlaw third parties off the California ballot. So this is something that needs to be worked on. It is not a process that's going to be taken care of overnight or within the next few weeks or few months. But first of all, we need to make certain that we take a stand and make certain that we maintain our positions where we can be a voice. But are you familiar with Proposition 14?
You know, yeah, sure, and I agree with you. But the problem is, wait a minute, even before 14 passed, you weren't getting anywhere. You know, these third parties, which, you know, we're getting, I mean, let's look at the Socialist Party at its height in 1912.
Okay, are you talking about the Socialist Party or the Peace and Freedom Party?
I'm talking about the Socialist
Party. Because I'm running as a candidate presently.
Right, I'm not talking, it probably wasn't yours. Wait a minute, I'm talking historically historically about the Socialist Party. And I'm using it as an example of the most successful third party in American politics in the last 150 years.
Right.
Independently of the Republican Party, which actually became a major party. But the Socialist Party in 1912 got a huge amount of votes, and Eugene Debs, when he ran from jail,
close to a million.
Yes. However,
but isn't that significant?
Of course it is. Of course it's significant. But at the same time, what happened was Debs was in jail. You know, Goldman and Berkman and hundreds of others were dispersed in the Palmer raids. There was hysteria and crackdown. Socialist Party members were locked up from the New York legislature. You know all this history.
Right.
And the question is, now we're seeing a similar repression coming down in Santa Cruz and in other cities, particularly in Santa Cruz, and I'm feeling it personally. So
you have to understand, you know, the timing of what took place in the 30s, and people were open to the socialist ideas in the 30s, and anytime when people are having situations, economic depression like they had then and also now, people are open to changes, and they're open to change. And I believe this is an ideal opportunity where people such as myself and minor parties, third parties, where we can make a difference. We made a difference back in the early part of the 20th century. We made a difference in the 30s, where many of those changes we saw helped to bring us out of the Depression. socialists didn't get credit for those ideas and what was implemented. But
yeah,
we were still part of the discussion.
I agree.
Now, people, what I see now, people are very open and supportive of individuals such as myself
but third parties
and what we have to offer.
Let's carry this metaphor into the 60s, where the socialist parties didn't make a difference, but the ideas of the socialist parties and other parties came through mass direct action. You know, SDS and the massive mobilizations against the war. For sure. But it didn't happen because people, you know, went to the polls and voted, particularly. It happened because people took action in the streets.
They went to the streets.
That's right.
And socialists were out there.
Right. Well, I'm asking,
When did the Freedom Party start?
Are you out there in the streets now? Is what I'm asking.
What do you think Occupy is all about?
Well, that's what I want to hear. Tell me more about your...
That's what Occupy is all about.
Right. Well, people are taking
direct action.
They're going right to the streets.
And we are demanding change now.
Right on. Now, what's coming up in the next month that we should know about? I'm not interested in the political caucuses. Okay. I'm not interested in Proposition 14, although I understand it's relevant. I want to know what direct actions you and others in this group of four people who met last night are getting into.
Well, within my campaign, I'm not certain exactly how you want me to approach this because you say you don't want me to talk about certain things. But anyway,
You can say what you want. We've got free speech here. You know.
Within the next few weeks, we have obviously another campaign meeting for all the candidates for the Peace and Freedom Party, which is coming up on the 22nd. The 22nd of this month.
In the streets. What are you going to do in the streets is what I'm wondering. What are you supporting in terms of direct action in the next 3 or 4 months?
As far as in regards to what is actually on the agenda, you would need to actually go to the campaign website for Stuart Alexander. I have a campaign committee of around 15 people that work on this.
Just tell me what you intend to be doing yourself. You're the man who's running. I mean, come on.
Myself, I will be going to groups and community meetings throughout Los Angeles, throughout the Bay Area. I've been invited to come and participate in various events here in the South Bay. As far as it, looking directly at my calendar, I didn't bring my calendar with me. I came down to sit with you for these few minutes where I could have a... Matter of fact, I just found out about this within the last hour.
Thank you for coming, by the way, Stuart. I appreciate it. I was handed this piece of paper
saying, you've been invited to come on this radio program.
You've been invited to be blasted on the radio.
Don't forget to dial 831. Otherwise, I would have been dialing 909.
So in other words, I mean, you know, I would love to hear if Stuart Alexander is going to be at the Wells Fargo shareholders meeting on the 24th, if he's going to be at the May 1st action on, you know, in Occupy Oakland on the May 1st. I want to know about this.
I mean,
but I don't really care if you're going to talk to a group.
When I go on my calendar, like when I was invited to the Palm Springs High School, I went there, I was invited to that event. I was able to speak to 500 students in regards to how we can make a difference here in 2012 and moving beyond. When I went there to the Left Forum in New York, which was last month, I was able to interact with almost 2,500 people there at that event and sit on various panels. So, and also participate there at the Occupy right there in the streets of New York.
When you talk about
what is being done, some things change from day to day and week to week. And when the opportunities are available, sometimes, as I mentioned about this radio program, I found out about this an hour ago.
Yeah, but no, I appreciate your call.
Can you be here within the next few weeks? I'll be appearing to a group of students, which is being presently arranged by our campaign committee, right there in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Students have been invited me to come and speak. And these are middle school students. But the thing is, this is an opportunity where the campaign can go and speak to.
And my issue is not your campaign, I got to tell you. My issue is what you can do.
My campaign involves the people.
Yeah, my issue is whether you and your campaign are going to back in the next month or two actions that are happening that may actually draw real people into the streets. That's my question, and that's really what I want to see. I mean, if you can get, you know, I don't know, tens of thousands of people to the polls in November for one day, you know, fine, whoopee-doo. But it's not going to, you know, my concern is what happens between now and then that you're going to be doing that will actually get people into the streets, will produce, I think, frankly, more impact than the polls. Although both, I'm not saying either should be excluded.
Well, I believe in the polls. I believe in a democratic process.
Well, if you believe
right
in that
now,
to the exclusion of the other, you know.
What's important right now is to get people out to go and vote. And right now, I need those votes.
If we
can get tens of thousands of people to go out and vote, that's going to be very important.
So the polls are more important than the streets, is what you're saying.
The polls are the streets because another way where we can be able to utilize our voice. That's one way that we can still make.
I would really make
a difference.
Yeah, I would really urge you to try to. You know, put more focus on the streets as you go, because that way I think the people that, you know, are in Occupy are not going to see you as another round of politicians with, you know, good ideas, but, you know, who are more interested in these, you know, sort of arcane discussions and rounding up symbolic votes for November than they are in taking change to make action immediately where it actually can have some impact, like in the local situations. And I think you're doing that even though what you're saying seems to work against that, because you are interested in Occupies and you are going out to people, ordinary people, working people, students, you know. I mean,
right.
I hear you are doing that, and I'm glad, and I commend you for doing that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And because that's very important. And unfortunately, this campaign, and I don't mean for this, I know you don't want this to come off to be just more political rhetoric, but this campaign is reaching millions of people across the country. And people are very supportive of the campaign because they believe that we can still, and when you consider everything, I believe we can still make a difference. And even though the political tide, I believe it is very strong, very forceful, I believe that, you know, Occupy has been has given us an edge where candidates such as myself, the four candidates that were there last night, Occupy Wall Street is giving us through the Occupy movement, is giving us an edge where our voice now is being more readily received. It's making a difference.
You know, I think you should turn it around, and I think you should say our voices are giving Occupy the edge, because Occupy is what's happening. Occupy
right.
is the new thing that's going on. I mean, well, it's now getting old, but it's the most direct democracy that's going on. In fact, it's a step beyond representative democracy, as I'm sure you know.
Right.
And therefore, you know, I think you're putting the cart before the horse when you say, gee, they've given us some additional votes at the polls. You know, whoopee-doo.
Well, the thing is...
What
it's all about is that we're sharing what Occupy Wall Street is all about. And I'm not certain if it came across that way. But we're sharing what Occupy is about. It's a very important movement. To me, it's the beginning of a revolution in this country. And I believe that's what's needed for today.
Fair enough, Stuart. I'm going to give you a couple of minutes now to say anything else you want to say, because I've been, you know, you got on the hot seat and you've been dealing with it.
You've been completely, I mean, it's been very exciting. I just want to share a couple of things in regards to the campaign, and thanks for the 2 minutes. Alex Mendoza, he's running as the vice presidential nominee for the Socialist Party USA. Our ticket, Alexander Mendoza campaign, we will be seeking that nomination with the Peace and Freedom Party come January 5th, and also for the November 6th election. Our website...
You don't mean January 5th, you mean...
I mean, what did I say? November 6th, 2012. Also, I'd just like to mention our website. You'll find it at StuartAlexanderForPresident2012.org. Let me spell that out. That's StuartAlexanderForPresident, spelled President, 2012.org.
once again, is StuartAlexander4President2012.org.
Spell Alexander.
Spell
Alexander one more time. I'm sorry. One more time.
That's S-T-E-W-A-R-T. Alexander is A-L-E-X-A-N-D-E-R.
Thank you. Go ahead.
My personal web page that millions of people are already still familiar with, that would be StuartAlexanderCares.com. That's StuartAlexanderCares.com. We do welcome any comments toward the campaign. We always asking people to support this campaign as we move closer to June and also to the November general election. I might mention, once again, the Peace and Freedom Party Los Angeles chapter, Los Angeles Central Committee, will be sponsoring a candidates forum. All the candidates come on the 22nd of this month. We ask people to listen in. I know that they will have various electronic equipment there where they can record the meeting, so it will be on the internet. But once again, I'd like to thank you for giving us this opportunity where we can share this. And also I might mention, in regards to the other candidates that were there present last night, they did an excellent job. I think they articulated what the party has to offer and also what we as the four candidates can offer the party here in 2012. But thanks again for the invitation. Like I say, short notice, didn't have too much time to prepare for it, but we always appreciate the opportunity.
No,
and
Stuart,
I will look forward to coming back when you show again.
Yeah, you know, Stuart, you know, it's getting past all the cliches and also the sincere comments that you're making. You know, it's not something you can really prepare for. I mean, you've been preparing for this for years. You've been fighting this fight politically in the political arena for years. I would only urge you to really think about what I told you about all four candidates on the basic. If somebody said to you, if you would sacrifice all the other issues, but you could get those four issues, war, bankster corruption, violation of civil liberties, if those are the only things you could get, if you would allow any one of your parties to win, would it make any difference which party won if those issues could be addressed? And I think about that for a while, because that's what, to me, is the most obvious thing that comes up when I see, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth parties fighting with each other over these issues. Although, in a way, I know you're not fighting. You're trying to provide, as you say, a democratic, quote-unquote, choice.
Right.
And then, secondly, Occupy and actions in the street and actions to deal with the tyrannies that are happening while we're waiting for the wonderful election, while nothing will be decided, is more important than any of those elections ultimately, although the elections are, you know, a way of mobilizing for sure. Those are the issues I ask you to think about.
I appreciate it. Thanks again for this valuable opportunity to present
and
the campaign.
Stuart Alexander, thanks, man.
Okay, have a good one.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, and that was Stuart Alexander, who is a candidate for Peace and Freedom Parties. He's running on that. He isn't on that ticket yet, but he's trying to get on that ticket. And he's already been chosen for the nominee for the Socialist Party USA. He had a debate and discussion last night at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, I believe it is, sponsored by the Peace and Freedom Party, with three other candidates. And I'm glad at least one of them got to call in. Rocky Anderson, the Justice Party candidate. Steve Durham, Freedom Socialist Party candidate. And Pete Lindsay, I think, Party for Socialism and Liberation. And his website again is www.StuartAlexanderForPresident2012.org. We have a caller here. Hey there. Welcome to Free Radio.
This is your roving reporter and standing on the barricade, Steve Blitch.
Are you the guy who was hassling the police yesterday in front of the post office?
We were challenging institutional authority. Rocky Anderson, Ed Fry, and myself.
I see. Well, I understand you backed down the blue-shirted bullies. Is that right?
Well, we're just defending our constitutional rights. They won't take them away. Not as long as I've got one breath in my body.
Well, I want to make sure you don't show up in any vacant buildings anywhere. That might be dangerous for you.
Vacant buildings. That has a ring of familiarity, but yeah. I can't place it.
Well, there's this woman, Catherine Byers, I'd like you to meet, actually. All right, so, Steve, you got some updates for us?
Actually, we'll be going over to the Occupy Journal someday. I'm doing needle exchange right now, and actually we are offering HIV and HCP testing as well at our site on Emmaline from 11:30 to 12:30 every Sunday, so that might be something your listeners would be interested in. Also, of course, the General Assembly today is at 2 o'clock, and I'll be asking the General Assembly to either support or consider drafting their own expression of support for the 75 River Street defendants. I'll be offering the ACLU statement of support, but if the GA feels they want to issue something stronger, then maybe they can use that as a template. And then, of course, tomorrow we have our regular meeting of the Occupy Santa Cruz Support Group for 75 River Street defendants. At 3 o'clock, as you well know.
That's at the building right next to the Café Brasil.
And then, of course, then we'll be over to Red Church for the Homeless Person Legal Assistance Project and a regular meal, and maybe one of your stirring announcements to the enthralling crowd that
Indeed.
You have done on a regular basis recently. And then Project Homeless Connect on Tuesday. Big doings.
Now, tell people a little bit about Project Homeless Connect, how long it goes for. Will you be able to get free eats and hot dogs and things of that sort?
I think they do serve some food, but generally it's more oriented toward service providing for the homeless community. They bring together about 35 or 40 different services, everything from food care to homeless persons legal assistance services, birth certificates, help with the DMV, dental, medical. And it'll be at the Civic Center Tuesday, the 17th, from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. And so all are welcome. And it's right now it's just an annual event. San Francisco, which is one of the first people to put on a Connect Day, I think has five of them a year. So we're trying to raise some money through some various donation programs and promotions to maybe have one in Watsonville either this year or next, and maybe go to two a year or three a year. So you can ask that one every day. But it's an opportunity for all the service providers in the community to come together in one place and really serve the homeless community.
Uh-huh. One day a year, of course.
Well, there you go. Well, you do what you can.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you do. I'm just, to me, it always has a token charity, you know, once a year, twice a year sort of thing to it.
Well, there are also the homeless meals that I do, Friends Thanksgiving, Christmas meal.
Well, you do
meal,
a lot, Steve. Steve, you're a 24-hour-a-day guy. It's not about you. It's about these events that you're sullying your own prestige by somehow allowing them to, blacken your collusion.
My prestige, cannot be sullied now that I stood shoulder to shoulder on the barricades with Ed Frye and Rocky Anderson.
In spite of your lack of interest in discussing full-spectrum democracy?
I had welcoming full-spectrum democracy. That was Ed. He got his say, and once again, the General Assembly chose not to support that, but I suspect he'll bring it back again. Maybe one day he'll kind of win the support that he would like.
A man of smooth tongue whose tongue, shall we say, conceals a sharp opinion.
Oftentimes.
So
the unseen hand, as you well know. Anyway.
Indeed, the unseen tongue, or the unseen heart, perhaps.
Oh, my, yeah.
What's going on between now and Thursday, other than the Project Connect and the Monday events that you mentioned? Anything around DSAL or the Secure Communities? Or?
Yeah, we have, the DSAL will have a steering committee meeting on Thursday. We're past, I think, the halfway point now in raising the required number of signatures, so we're confident that May 17th is, we're projecting anyway, that's the final day for us to gather the required number of signatures, and we'll actually get the number we need to put on the ballot, and we'll let the people in Santa Cruz decide whether they would like to construct a desalination plant. So that's moving forward. And then, of course, there's always something going on.
Secure Communities, Sheriff Wowak.
Well, actually, on Tuesday at the police community room, they're having a judicial forum. So some of the local judges will be there. I think my time is 7 to 8:30, I think. You have to verify that. And we will be, you can't really ask questions, but you can submit questions to the panel of judges. And so Occupy Santa Cruz Staff Foreclosure Working Group will be there, and we're hoping that we can submit a question or two in advance to see what the judges can do to help us with mortgage loan reform and to prevent fraudulent foreclosures and fraudulent, you know, mortgage transactions. So that's an opportunity for people that like to come out. That's Tuesday night, so it'll be a busy Tuesday.
So what about the foreclosure situation, Steve? You've been keeping an eye on this, and I've heard some skepticism about the behavior of some of the supervisors around actions that they might take in terms of, I don't know, cutting off the funding of the sheriff for foreclosure activity or whatever. I mean, what if you were king of the forest in Santa mm-hmm. Cruz, what would you like to see in place to deal with the foreclosure crisis?
Well, in terms of institutional reaction, I would like to see us adopt the stronger steps that Santa Clara County has taken. As you know, secret communities is a program. It's not legislation, so it's not federal law. It's simply a federal program. And what they have said to the jurisdiction is what they call an unfunded mandate. So the sheriff is required to comply and required to participate in the program, but they don't get any funds, any matching funds or any reimbursement from the federal government. What Santa Clara has done is they simply have said unless they get some indication in writing from the federal government that they'll be reimbursed for whatever funds they spend in secure communities, they're not going to participate. So I suggested that the Board of Supervisors on Tuesday when I appeared before them, I suggested that they look closely at Santa Clara's Boulder initiative and try to incorporate that into the things that they want to do. So actually they did send it out to their county council to take a look and see if they could do that. I pointed out to them, of course, the point that I'm making is that the sheriff, if he decided not to cooperate, would not be breaking federal law. He would simply be not participating in a federal program. Now, he could certainly be subject to censure or some other thing, you know, that would not be, helpful in his operation of his department. But nevertheless, we feel like he could make that kind of thing. But the county council is taking a look at it, so we'll see.
What about your personal importuning of Sheriff Wowak, the steak dinners you've been with him, the tete-a-tetes, the midnight meetings? How's that going?
Well, we had a meeting with the sheriff the last Tuesday for about an hour or so in his office with the self-foreclosure working group, Jacqueline Seidel, Joy Hinz, myself, and a couple others. And we just asked him what he could do to refuse, and we would suggest that he do so, to serve eviction notices following foreclosures. We're a judicial foreclosure state. And so what happens is you default on your mortgage, they non-judicially foreclose, the bank does, on your property, and then they'll auction it off in the courthouse steps. That doesn't mean that you're automatically dispossessed of your property. You can stay in your property. As you and I know, a couple of the folks who are supportive of Occupy have decided to do that, and they've actually lent their homes to us to make a stand against evictions post-foreclosure. And he said that he is required by law to serve the notices that are given to him. He cannot break the law until the law is changed. He's going to have to act accordingly. I thought he gave us the only explanation that he could. I think he explained his position clearly. And so we have to be the people to change that law at either the local or legislative level. And that's something that citizens can do.
So in other words, it's okay if he doesn't enforce the law on smart meters, for example, but he does have to enforce the law on evicting people from their homes, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's really apples and oranges, and you should probably talk to Josh Hart about that, not me or Marilyn Garrett. That's a longer conversation for another time, but I could explain to you why he did that and on what grounds he did, but...
Aren't there sheriffs in other jurisdictions that are not enforcing these laws?
There are, but they are only in the Midwest, Illinois, one and a couple of back east, but they are in a different judicial foreclosure situation. So I'm not really certain that it's analogous. We did suggest that to the sheriff, that he may want to take that kind of principal stand as some of his fellow sheriffs have done. But I think that it's a different situation. And until we know one way or another for sure and can make a comparison or not, we don't really have any grounds to...
Well, I know you will race to the Internet after this afternoon to find out exactly what the comparison is and come back with a full report to the General Assembly.
I'm always racing to something, but I was racing to the phone to talk to my good friends at Free Radio.
Hey, you have done a fine job, Stuart Plaich. That's Stuart Anderson. It's Steve Plaich. Did you get to the blather last night around the four candidates chattering away say about who's going to be the...
You know, actually, I was doing the suicide prevention, as you well know.
Oh, yes, correct. So, well, I didn't really well
that
know
was occupied. That was occupying my evening.
Yes. Well, so regarding suicide prevention, do you feel that the... I understand that the imposition of the kind of pressures on the Santa Cruz 11 that have happened have resulted in one attempted suicide. Do you predict more attempted suicides among the Santa Cruz 11?
Difficult thing. We're doing the best we can to support and defend the Santa Cruz 11, and we'll continue to do so. It's a newly formed coalition in support of the Santa Cruz 11.
And is suicide prevention coming out with a stop the suicides of the Santa Cruz 11, drop the charges, perhaps?
Perhaps I'll take that to the board.
Amen.
I gotta go. I will talk to you hopefully soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Steve Plaich. He didn't give his number, but he usually does, so I will give it for him. If you have a legal problem, you're a homeless person, he may or may not be able to help. He is a legal assistant rather than a person who is really qualified to go to court to argue, but he talks up a storm with them legal teeth, and he puts himself out there a lot. And I often disagree with him, and I often agree with him. It's this, that, and the other. It's always... Vigorous Conversations with Steve Plaich, rhymes with H. His phone number is 466-6078. Again, 466-6078. And he generally is pretty good about calling people back. At least he calls me back, and I haven't heard people complaining much that he doesn't call them back. And he puts his number out in ways that other people who are associated with the Homeless Lack of Services Center or attorneys do not do. So... tip of the hat to Steve Plaich, rhymes with H. We're coming up in the last minutes of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. This is the program you're listening to on Free Radio 101.3 FM. And it looks like my master plan to play the Keith McHenry program from March 25th, which probably a number of you listeners were already at and have heard, but some of you probably haven't. He's the co-founder of Food Not Bombs and gave some really interesting discussions of his travels through the occupies of the country. These plans have, had to be superseded by callers and people who I didn't expect to call in but did, and I'm glad they did, actually. It's more... it's more interesting radio than listening to something that has already been done. I may have a few more comments to make, though, before I leave, which is going to happen shortly, because the show actually officially ends at 1, usually ends a bit later, but sometimes that ain't happening. Here's an article by Carol Denny, Nonviolence Defeated UC Davis PD. And this is in the Berkeley Daily Planet, I believe, which I recommend as a online publication. I've talked about it before. You can find it under Berkeley Daily Planet. Carol Denny is an activist and a singer who herself has been prosecuted for protest activity. She was sued by the University of California back in the early 90s as part of the Berkeley Four, as they didn't call themselves, but as they were. Carol Denny... David Nadell, was it Michael Delacour? It was Michael Lee, actually, I think was his name. And then there was, of course, the famous Ashkenaz owner, David Nadell, who was assassinated or killed or shot in the 90s, unfortunately. They all were fighting the University of California's attempt to shut down protests that effectively defended People's Park, which is again under attack up there. I've talked about it a bit on past shows. Carol Denny writes this article. They had helmets, they had batons, radios, gloves, guns, tasers, pepper balls, and of course, oleoresin capsaicin spray, commonly known as pepper spray. They had not only MK4 canisters of the stinging, sometimes lethal substance, which was authorized for release, but also MK9 canisters, a stream, not a spray, for which there was no training or authorization on the University of Davis campus. And now, of course, my computer is freezing up. I'll read a little bit more. Like George Zimmerman, the man accused of shooting and killing unarmed Trayvon Martin. There we go. Well,
Don't go away, folks. Bear with me. I'm still working on this. I hope I can do it. Yeah, I have developing technical problems, but hopefully not giving up. Anyway, there is a. I guess her point is that UC Davis, the decision of UC Davis was to criticize the pepper spraying of the very nonviolent students gratuitously and actually maliciously by the police, almost, and also casually, a combination of casual malice, I guess is the way I'd put it. For those who've seen the videos of the students who were sprayed, pepper sprayed for an occupation at UC Davis, where they were essentially sitting around on the ground. And the cops came over, one cop came over and just sort of methodically sprayed them with this stuff. And there were, it took months and months to get the report released. But when they finally did get it released, it was a denunciation of this by a sort of a blue ribbon panel. And that essentially recommended that there be a reexamination of the fact that police officers' files are kept so confidential that it blocks the publicization of the publication of reports where they are involved in quasi-criminal activities. Let's put it this way, activities that in their official duties they're engaging in repressing free speech. So, the gist of this article was that it was because the people were nonviolent that it made such an impression on all the notables who later reviewed all this. And I certainly can't deny what Carol says. It's certainly true. And, you know, it does have a significant impact on when people are gratuitously abused and have the courage to just sit there and take it, although some people regard it as, dare I say, stupid, or in a way, I don't know, ideological, sort of, you know, it has a kind of a, well, has a peculiar aspect to it. I mean, I'm actually, you know, a fan of a lot of Gandhian tactics, but it also, to an ordinary person looking on, it looks, it produces a sense of shame and horror, which is the point. You're making yourself a victim in order to impact other people. It's manipulative in its own way. And it also is, I think, manipulative in a positive way. It's a way of saying, I'm not going to respond with violence to you. You're going to feel the violence of what you do by seeing the pain you are causing in me. And that can be a very powerful thing, for sure, no question about it. But it's also only one response to that kind of action. And not everybody is willing to do that and keep coming back for more. And other people watching it are not necessarily moved to come out and do it. Although it can have a very powerful force in many circumstances historically and in the future. I think I've actually come back to the article, so I'll read a little more of it. Like George Zimmerman, the man accused of shooting and killing young, unarmed Trayvon Martin in Florida, they cited a personal sense of fear, the police did, as reason for taking action by, in the case of UC Davis officers, unleashing potentially deadly and unnecessary force on seated, non-resisting, non-violent protesters. Whether or not the lack of organization and good judgment on the Davis campus results in firings or disciplinary measures for campus officers and personnel, one thing should be clear. If the Davis Occupy protesters had been other than non-violent, this critical report would have been written very differently. If the Davis Occupy protesters had been other than nonviolent, we would not have had what we have now, a call to revisit appropriate system-wide levels of oversight and review, as well as a call to the legislature to reevaluate aspects of the police officers' Bill of Rights that appear to limit independent public review of police conduct. The report goes on to say that this limitation does not serve the police or the public, that is to say, the fact that the police officers have special rights to limit public review of their police conduct. That has essentially crippled police review boards since it's the Copley decision in 2006 in the state, as I understand it. When information necessary to understand and evaluate police conduct is unavailable to the public has less confidence in the police, and the police cannot perform their duty without public confidence. Thanks to the nonviolence of the UC Davis Occupy movement, we as a community have a priceless opportunity to restore our right to gather together safely to petition the government for a redress of grievances, a right which no longer exists when officers' sense of insecurity, despite all their weaponry, is allowed to override the First Amendment. Only through change at the state level can we restore local civilian review, without which a true sense of community and safety cannot exist. And certainly there's some truth in what Carol writes, but I'd say a couple of things. She's responding to the fact that the UC Davis report on the police officers was finally forced out and shown to be a unanimous denunciation of this police pepper spraying of nonviolent, non-resisting, legal protesters who weren't charged with anything at all. Yes, it made quite an effect on people. Yes, it produced a report. Is producing reports. What we're looking for is returning to a system, an inept and inadequate system of civilian review of police, which has never been effective in Berkeley, California, even where it's been strongest, something that we want to put all our money on. We've seen in Santa Cruz, I'm always talking about the destruction of the police review board and how it would have been better if it weren't destroyed, and I mean that. But I also have also talked about how inept and inadequate it was in terms of what it needed to do. So there really is, it's a sort of a mixed bag. It also has to be said that while nonviolence produces reports that may or may not prompt change, and hopefully do, making the restoring civilian police review, violent behavior has also done that. The riots of the 60s produced famous responses. The Kerner Commission report, which denounced the conditions that led to the riots, and the riots were a response to massive, persistent, and continual police brutality in urban areas and racial discrimination, and that produced an influx of money into the areas of those areas which. Presumably was a positive thing, although, you know, there hasn't been fundamental institutional change of the kind that really is necessary. Instead, we have every third black person gets locked away in jail for a period of time in their life. So, you know, it's not as simple as A, B, or C, or adding it all up and, you know, then marching forward blindly to the banner of nonviolence or it only can be armed revolution. I think you have to think out these situations carefully in every situation as to what, and if you're making a judgment on other people, which is always risky, but I love to do it all the time, then you have to think about that too. Here's an article that I'm not going to have a chance to read fully because I don't have much time, but I think I want to get into it a little bit. It's called Seven Rules for Recording Police. Last week, the city of Boston agreed to pay Simon Glick, $170,000 in damages and legal fees to settle a civil rights lawsuit stemming from his 2007 felony arrest for videotaping police roughing up a suspect. Prior to the settlement, the First Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously ruled that Glick had a constitutionally protected right to videotape police carrying out their duties in public. The Boston Police Department now explicitly instructs its officers not to arrest citizens openly recording them in public. Slowly but surely, the courts are recognizing that recording on-duty police is a protected First Amendment activity. But in the meantime, police around the country continue to intimidate and arrest citizens for doing just that. So if you're an aspiring cop watcher, you must be uniquely prepared to deal with hostile cops. If you choose to record the police, you can reduce the risk of terrible legal consequences and video loss by understanding your state's laws and carefully adhering to the following rules. Rule 1. Know the law wherever you are. Conceived at a time when pocket-sized recording devices were available only to James Bond types, most eavesdropping laws were originally intended to protect people against snoops, spies, and peeping toms. Now, with this technology in the hands of average citizens, police and prosecutors are abusing these outdated laws to punish citizens merely attempting to document on-duty police. The law in 38 states plainly allows citizens to record police as long as you don't physically interfere with their work. Police might still unfairly harass you, detain you, or confiscate your camera. They might even arrest you for some catch-all misdemeanor such as obstruction of justice or disorderly conduct. But you will not be charged for illegally recording police. 12 states, California, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Montana, Nevada, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Washington, and note specifically California, require the consent of all parties for you to record a conversation. However, all but two of these states, Massachusetts and Illinois, have an expectation of privacy provision to their all-party laws, which courts have ruled does not apply to on-duty police or anyone in public. In other words, it's technically legal in California and the other 47 states to openly record on-duty police. And it's only in Massachusetts and Illinois where these other issues arise. And apparently in Massachusetts that's changed, or at least the courts have ruled it's changed in Massachusetts. Rule 2, don't secretly record police. In most states, it's almost always illegal to record a conversation in which you're not a party and don't have consent to record. Massachusetts is the only state to uphold a conviction for recording on-duty police, but that conviction was for a secret recording where the defendant failed to inform police he was recording. As in the Glick case, Massachusetts courts have ruled that openly recording police is legal, but secretly recording them isn't. Fortunately, judges and juries are soundly rejecting these laws. Illinois, the state with the most notorious anti-recording law in the land, expressly forbids you from recording on-duty police. Early last month, an Illinois judge declared that law unconstitutional, ruling in favor of Chris Drew, a Chicago artist charged with felony eavesdropping for secretly recording his own arrest. Last August, a jury acquitted Tiawanda Moore of secretly recording two Chicago Police Internal Affairs investigators who encouraged her to drop a sexual harassment complaint against another officer. A juror described the case to reporters as a waste of time. In September, an Illinois state judge dropped felony charges against Michael Allison. After running afoul of local zoning ordinances, he faced up to 75 years in prison for secretly recording police and attempting to tape his own trial. The lesson for you is this. If you want to limit your legal exposure and present a strong legal case, record police openly if possible. But if you videotape on-duty police from a distance, such an announcement might not be possible or appropriate unless police approach you. Now, on the Santa Cruz scene, I don't announce I'm recording. It's obvious within this little recorder I have. But it also has to be said that if you are announcing a police you're recording, it's possible the police may refuse to serve you or walk away from you or try to obstruct whatever effort you're doing. If it's, for example, they're trying to get business done at the police station, on a number of occasions I've been refused the right to pick up public records when I've informed the police that I'm recording them, because I've had trouble in the past at the police station. So that can be a concern. Most recently, that has not been the case. I have had my tape recorder out. It has been obvious, and I haven't had any problems, as you shouldn't have. On other occasions, employees of the city have said, there are signs all around the city office saying, you cannot record here, which, of course, is false and a form of trying to intimidate citizens into abandoning their rights. That actually stemmed from the fact that we HUF members, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom members, did record people in the office of the mayor openly when they began threatening us with eviction and disorderly conduct charges, though we were in a public area and we were trying to get city officials to talk to homeless people in the winter about the lack of winter shelter. We had what's called the coffee clutch, and that was way back in 2000 in the winter in the offices of then-Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice. You know, I'd like to talk more about all this stuff, but I'm getting hoarse. Plus, I'm running out of time. So I would recommend you check out the rest of this article. Rule 3 is respond to shit cops say. And it gives you some options on how to respond to different things like, what are you doing? Let me see your ID. Please stop recording me. It's against the law. And it tells you, stand back. Rule 4, don't share your video with police. Rule 5, prepare to be arrested. Rule 6, master your technology. And Rule 7, don't point your camera like a gun. And there's a lot of interesting discussion. This article is called Civil Rights, Police Privacy Rights by Steve Sillerman. I think if you go, it's called Seven Rules for Recording Police. So if you want to bing for Seven Rules for Recording Police, you'll get the full story. I recommend reading it. It's interesting. Maybe I'll talk about it some more next time. I'm going to put on a little music now, and I'm going to go try to save what's left of my voice. And off to the General Assembly, where I'll be at the post office checking out the scene and trying to stay warm. Maybe it's warm outside. It's a little chilly here in the studio. I want to thank everybody who listened in. I want to remind you there is an online petition to dismiss the charges against the Santa Cruz 11. A place to go to find that is Santa Cruz Indie Media. Actually, try Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking. That's a website, all one word, Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking, and it's blogspot.com. So just, you know, write in Becky Johnson, One Woman, and you probably should get to the website, and you'll find the petition there. And I encourage you to sign the online petition. The more signatures, the better. I'll be back on Thursday. I'll be at the Huff meeting on Wednesday. If people call in and want to do a Project Connect table on Tuesday, I'll be interested in that. The phone number to call is 423-4833. Huff meets Wednesday, 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific Avenue. And that's all I got for you today, folks, but I'll be back.